South Coast, the Wild Coast is lonely.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Cleaning house at the Air Force. Fired today by Defense Secretary Robert Gates, the top two guys in charge there.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he respected Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn and the top general Michael Buzz Mosley, but he made them resign as a wake-up call after mistakes such as delivering a nuclear missile part to Taiwan.
The declining standards raised questions in the minds of the public as well as internationally.
It's really a very sad day for the Air Force.
Says James Roach, Air Force Secretary until 3 years ago. He praises the two men just fired, but
they are the two people who are ultimately responsible for everything that occurs within the Air Force.
Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Today, for the first time since his capture 5 years ago, the world gets a look at the self-proclaimed mastermind of 9/11 terror, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, standing in a Guantanamo courtroom.
The judge in questioning Mohammed said, "Do you understand the consequences? If you are found guilty, you'll be given the death sentence." Khalid Sheikh Mohammed responded, "That is what I wish. I wish to be martyred." And then he said, "I've been a martyr for a long time."
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr in Guantanamo covering the arraignment of five alleged terrorists. Also there, the executive director of the ACLU, Anthony Romero.
I believe by what the government has done to them already with the torture and denial of access to counsel, the effort to use hearsay evidence, it's very hard to imagine how they can get justice in this court of law.
The people who follow such things say we've never seen the current number of home foreclosures. And CBS's Barry Bagnato reports the numbers are not likely to decline anytime soon.
A new wave of economic problems threatens to extend the foreclosure crisis for months. Higher costs for fuel, for food, for living.
The economic strain on borrowers is just going to be an added burden that's going to cause more defaults, more foreclosures.
Because home equity can't be counted upon anymore to bail out many homeowners, says Guy Sokol, a mortgage expert. It's being eaten up by plummeting home prices. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Politics. Campaign officials say John McCain collected $21.5 million in May, his best month of presidential fundraising. Hillary Rodham Clinton today disavows efforts by some supporters urging Barack Obama to choose her as his running mate. The pushback does come a day after she said she would end her quest for the Democratic nomination and endorse Obama. Like an aging heavyweight, the nation's midsection keeps getting pounded. Rain, hail, high winds. Meteorologist Jim Springer in Nebraska.
We've got a really strong low-pressure system, and it just keeps pulling moisture up into this area.
Forecasters are warning of potential tornado outbreaks there and in Kansas today. Oil surging nearly $6 to $128 a barrel. Wall Street likes it. The Dow ending up 214 points to finish at 12,604 today. NASDAQ gains 46, S&P 500 up 26, and the national average for a gallon of gas still hovering just below $4 a gallon. This is CBS News.
Ever seen the way a squirrel hoards acorns? Well, that's how I am with Travel Rewards, especially now that I'm getting 1,000 choice privileges bonus points every time I stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn hotels. Just book at choicehotels.com, then start loading up on your reward points. Best of all, you don't even need stretchy cheeks. Visit choicehotels.com to book your stay with Econo Lodge or Roadway Inn and start hoarding away.
Members earn bonus points when paying qualifying rates. Reservations must be made at choicehotels.com with arrival between 6-1 and 8-14-08. For details, visit choicehotels.com.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25%, too. From June 5th through the 9th is the Summer Savings Event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save, only at Sherwin-Williams, for painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Ford Motor Company poised to tell many of its North American white-collar workers, you no longer work here.
While Ford isn't saying exactly how many salaried workers will be let go, they say they're cutting the white-collar budget by 15%. CEO Alan Mulally says the cuts will not be across the board. They will be involuntary, and the goal is to make Ford profitable long-term.
But in the near term, we're just so sorry that we have to, you know, see some of our employees leave the operation.
Just last month, Ford announced big production cuts aimed at dealing with a declining truck market. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
Just this week, General Motors announcing plant shutdowns that will cost the jobs of 10,000 workers. show your team spirit, but maybe don't show anything else at high school contests in Wisconsin, where the Sportsmanship Committee of the state's Interscholastic Athletic Association is recommending a ban on fans with bare or painted chests from all indoor games. Outdoors, okay. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
A message from the Orbitz Traveler Wellness Center.
Hi, this is Dr. Martin Pakulski-Blatz, and I'm here to tell you about Orbitz's biggest sale ever. Now you can save up to 50% on all hotel stays. Now, why is that important? Well, we've found that people who save large amounts of money on their hotels live exactly 82 years longer. True story. So head over to Orbitz.com and save up to 50%. It's your fountain of youth, America.
Valid for travel 428 through 938, booked by 7608. See separate details.
Whether you're blocking out noise or water, there's a new kind of earplug called BioEars that actually fights germs and helps prevent damaging bacteria from getting inside your ear. When you or your kids swim, use BioEars to keep water out and help prevent swimmer's ear. You won't find a safer or more comfortable way to block water or noise than BioEars. Made of soft silicone that conforms to the shape and size of any ear. Available in the ear care section of CVS, Rite Aid, Duane Reade, Long's Drug Fair, and online at BioEars.com. BioEars.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hey, good afternoon. That's a little more relaxing. That's a little more like it. Boy, that guy's excited. Peter B. Collins is not here this afternoon. I'm Peter Lawfer, most pleased to be sitting in for my friend and colleague, Peter B. Collins, up and down the West Coast and wherever else his show penetrates. It's a pleasure to be spending the next 3 hours with you, and I'll tell you in a minute what we're going to do overall these next 3 hours. But first, I want to say hello to another friend and colleague, Marcos Kounalakis, who is on the line here from San Francisco, also where we are bent on just causing you some mental duress this afternoon. Marcos, welcome to the Peter B. Collins program.
Peter B. Collins, Peter Lawfer, I love them both.
Yes, as well you should. It's a good name, and it shows that toughness and solid reality based on the rock. Maybe you can let the audience know, because you are at least relatively fluent in Greek, right?
That is correct, Peter. And in fact, you are, of course, correct regarding your name. It's a good thing that you've been looking at the etymology of that. It is, in fact, from the Greek word petros or petra, which means rock.
And hence we get words like petroleum. Because
the stuff bubbles up from deep down in the geological recesses of the earth.
And we get the name of the city in Jordan, Petra, because?
It is carved out of rock. It is a beautiful valley that you can visit just in that country. And it's as you approach, you have to get in through this very slim chasm. And then when you get in there, it's this fabulously carved stone town.
Yeah, one of the most amazing places I've been to. The going through that passageway, and I don't know how you went, but I went on a horse and sitting on the back of that horse and going through that passageway, and then having it open up to those facades carved out of the rock was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
Well, you went in more like Indiana Jones than I did. I went on foot. And it was a spring day, so it wasn't too hot, so the trek was not going to exhaust me when I got there. But yours sounds much more like the most familiar way that people have seen Petra, the town, and maybe aren't familiar that it was Petra, but in that Indiana Jones movie where he did go galloping along and then ended up in this opening to that town.
That was it, Petra. You know, it's amazing, and we are going to get to what we're here to talk about this hour here momentarily. With Marcos Kounoulakis, I'm Peter Laufer, sitting in for Peter B. Collins. You're always welcome to join the program at 888-573-8372. Marcos, I'm going to tell you and everyone else what's coming up the rest of the afternoon, because it'll entertain you. You know some of these folks. In the next hour, I'll be talking with Charles Jaco. He's a news reporter now headquartered in St. Louis, and we're going to be talking about the attempts by a Brazilian company to buy Bud Light and what that means to St. Louis, where Anheuser-Busch has been such a part of the community as a local entity for so long. And you know Charles Jaco.
I do, and I think a lot of listeners probably remember him also as C.D. Jaco when he was reporting regularly from hot spots around the world on CNN.
Indeed they do. Jeff Kamen will join us that hour also. Jeff Kamen now works with something called the American News Project, and one can see some of his video reportage at AmericanNewsProject.org. We're going to talk to him about his experiences at demonstrations filled with pro-Hillary Clinton voters who are frustrated by the recent developments in the primary process. He's been covering that in Washington, and that ought to be intriguing. He's got some sound to share with us. And the final hour, Marcos, you may wish to tune in as we're going to be checking in with another colleague in the news business who headquarters himself in Bakersfield, California, Terry Phillips. You know Terry.
I do, a hot spot and a garden spot in California.
Well, I don't know about that. But we certainly don't want to insult our listeners who are in Bakersfield, nor do we want to insult Terry's chosen, at least for now, hometown. But something really intriguing is going on just up the street that he's been covering in Fresno, where the valedictorian of one of the high schools with a 4-point-plus grade point average and an acceptance to the University of California is about to be deported unless something changes, because he and his family came here from, and everybody is going to expect, or most people I would imagine me to say Mexico, came here from Armenia in 1992 to try to escape from what they thought would be threats to their family's lives after the Soviet era, because the father of the family was a policeman when Armenia was a Soviet republic. And that's a part of the country you know well from your news reporting.
It is. I used to be, as you know, a Moscow correspondent for NBC Radio and for Mutual News. And I do know Terry as well. And I, as I said, I meant no disrespect for Bakersfield, but Fresno, of course, is a place that makes a lot of sense for those who are of Armenian descent to end up. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
Yeah, it ought to be a fascinating hour and fascinating story, and especially in juxtaposition to the common tales of deportation that we're hearing regarding Mexicans and others coming up from south of the border. Now, the reason you're joining the Peter B. Collins show this hour with me, sitting in for Peter B. Collins, Marcos, is that there's so much either transparency that's needed or incestuous behavior that needs to be revealed here. But you and I work together on the radio on a program called Washington Monthly on the Radio. You are the publisher of the magazine Washington Monthly. Tell those in the audience for just a moment who may not know the history of Washington Monthly and its role in our society today, what that magazine is all about.
Sure, and I suspect that a number of your readers are familiar with the magazine.
Listeners here on the radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say readers?
You
well, there you have it.
Readers.
I'm showing my print bias here.
I guess.
It is a magazine, and it's been published for nearly 40 years out of Washington, D.C., founded by a man named Charlie Peters. And it's been a neoliberal magazine that has really been in the Beltway and trying to work for and towards good government. And the unique thing about it is the journalism that we do at the magazine is always solutions-based. We try to sort of cut out the cynicism from our reporting, and certainly in the way that we try to come up with solutions for government.
Yeah, and it mandates, because it is the kind of a word that can be interpreted differently by different people, what you mean by neoliberal.
Yeah, actually the neoliberal coinage came later in the game. It started out essentially as an opposition magazine to many of the policies of the war and other conservative really difficult policies within Washington, D.C. that were affecting how government would function. There was a lot of talk about bureaucracies and like. So when it became a neoliberal magazine, it meant that it was really approaching centrist-type policies that were acceptable. It meant that, you know, these things that were taboo, even though they were conservative ideas, all ideas had some merit to them. And so we were trying to put them into a context, and this was before my time at the magazine, but put them into a context that really didn't require you to be sort of very fixed in your ideology if the ideas were good and acceptable.
Yeah, which sounds like the kind of embracement that we, I say for all 360 million of us, are all looking for now in this post-Bush era, which brings us to the project that you and I have worked on most recently and that we are going to really quite shamelessly talk about for the rest of the hour here. And thanks to Peter B. Collins for giving us this opportunity to make use of his airwaves. But I think it fits right in to what his program is all about. You and I just published a book titled Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era, and it comes out of the work we've done on the radio with Washington Monthly on the radio.
Yeah, and it's that weekly radio program that we run nationally, syndicated nationally, and in that program, we try to find those voices of reason and change, and if they aren't reasonable or aren't interested in change, then we are those voices of reason and change, because we really do confront those who are just trying to give us spin or who are blowhards. But for the most part, the people we approach and whom we speak with, when you approach them with a level of respect and interest and curiosity, you find that you get really some interesting feedback and some interesting directions that you can take those conversations.
And we'll be talking about those people and those conversations as the hour continues here on the Peter B. Collins program. I'm Peter Laufer, pleased to be sitting in for Peter B. and pleased to be talking with my business partner and reporting colleague, Marcos Kounoulakis, about our book, Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era, published by PolyPoint in Sausalito, California. You're welcome to join the conversation at 888-573-8372. It's 17 after the hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Stephanie Miller, you're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
So rock and roll here. Where is the Bach and Beethoven and Brahms?
I'm Peter Laufer, pleased to be sitting in for Peter B. Collins, and pleased to be talking this hour with Marcos Kounoulakis, my colleague and co-author with the book Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era. Marcos, there's a conference going on right now up in Minneapolis, a alternative media conference. Do you remember the name of that?
I don't.
I don't either, but that's where Peter B. Collins is, just so those who are missing him today know. And in the third hour, he's going to check in from that conference. We'll get the formal name of it and find out what's going on up there. In the meantime, we are lucky enough to have this opportunity to talk about our book, which just launched. It's just now going out to the stores. And Marcos, here's something that we haven't really talked about ourselves together alone because we've been so busy getting this thing out. But what would be the elevator pitch? Why should someone be interested in picking this book up and reading it?
Well, because this whole nation's undergoing a moment of profound change. And I think what we've lost in these last 8 years are those voices that have stood out, because the voices that have been dominant have been those of power, the Bush administration voices. I mean, we've been fed this pablum for years now of, you know, we've got to get them before they get us, or the terrorists are here and there, and fear, and you name it. It just seems as if we've been deluged by these dominant voices, and I think that now that we're finally breaking through and that the media is allowing for these new voices, or these voices that have always been there, to again reemerge, I think our timing is actually quite good on this, because we bring together quite a menu of interesting people and ideas.
Yeah, one of the things that I obviously am looking through it, as I'm sure you are, and with a different eye, because we're done writing it and we're looking at the finished book, and one of the things that intrigues me about the conversations that we have with these people is this sense of, I guess I put it in the negative, the absence of gloom, the no fear, and then on the positive side, the we can do it. This stuff that we grew up with as Americans, I think particularly if there's something that is special to Americans, it's this sense that we can reinvent ourselves, we can do anything we want, or if we can't do it, we can at least try to do it. And these last 8 years, it's been like the enemy's been in charge. We have Roosevelt saying you have nothing to fear but fear itself, and you've got this guy and his cabal saying be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. And even those of us, I think, Marcos, who have who have railed against that from the beginning, it's impossible not to be affected by the pall that's been over the nation, not just because of the attacks of September 11, 2001, but more because of the response of this administration.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Peter. And you're right. How do you possibly escape that dominance of message and that dominance of fear that is propounded on a daily basis? And as I say, I'm just now starting to feel as if those other voices, maybe it's a combination of the president officially being a lame duck at this point and his policies being recognized popularly as failed, with one exception, of course, the AIDS policy, which I think, you know, because I'm always asked, he can't have done everything wrong, and if there's one area where I will give him credit, it's for recognizing and funding appropriately some of the work that he's done for AIDS in Africa.
Yeah, you think that has been funded adequately?
I think so. I mean, certainly when you compare it to previous administrations, you know.
I don't know. You know, the problem that I have with all of this is I can't help but comparing any number now with the $11 billion a month in Iraq.
Yeah, it's a devastating figure, and certainly it's bankrupted so many of our other programs in our nation, especially, and when you look at anything, whether it be education or health care, any of the other basic services and needs of this nation, I absolutely agree with you, Peter. But I also want to remain at least somewhat reasonable when I look at this administration, because there is so much that they've done wrong. There has been so much devastation, so much cruddiness that has come out of this group in the Bush administration, that for me to actually sound credible, I really do try to find the one or two things that maybe they've done right and have tried to do right.
Yeah, here's one of the things they've done right. They've done such a job of fouling things up that the next president, whomever it is going to look great by comparison.
I think that's exactly right, Peter. It's going to be very difficult for the next president not to look good, both to American eyes and to those overseas.
Yeah, I was thinking of that during the Obama speech, the most recent one that he gave in St. Paul. I was thinking of it from the perspective of being overseas, and you and I have both worked and lived overseas for years, and I thought of my companions, my friends, my acquaintances, my business colleagues, just the man on the street overseas, watching that and realized, at least from my point of view, that they must have just felt good again about America.
Yeah, the same way we're feeling good about America. You know, and I want to bring it back to the book that you mentioned earlier, because, as you said, these voices are truly American. I mean, I think that's what you were sort of coming back to, is that Americans, by our odd nature and our interesting history, have this very forward-thinking, very optimistic aspect to ourselves and to our culture. And we tend not to be bound and certainly not chained by our history. And so, as you put it earlier, we're allowed, and in fact, it's expected of us to reinvent ourselves.
Exactly. And these are the voices that are in Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era, by me, Peter Laufer, and my colleague on the line here, Marcos Kounoulakis. And we'll talk about some of those voices specifically, what they mean to us and why we think that they will mean something of consequence to you as the hour continues here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you'd like to join us, you're welcome to, 888-573-8372 is the number. The book, Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era, is available now at your local independent bookseller and at the usual chains. You can also check it out at Holly Point Press, our publisher. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter Laufer, talking with Marcos Kounoulakis.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. I'm Sam Litzinger, sitting in for Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. Remember what they taught you in economics class, that business about supply and demand, less demand, more supply, lower prices? So
how come the energy industry doesn't seem to have read the homework? More after this.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, is proud to present the Peerless Diamond, the ideal cut diamond.
That's Jared!
The precision of the cut brings out the beauty of the diamond. That's why, since its creation almost 90 years ago, the ideal cut has been celebrated for its ability to bring out a diamond's radiance and fire. And the spectacular Peerless Diamond, available exclusively at Jared, represents the best of its kind. See for yourself why it's the ideal cut diamond.
It can only be Jared!
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world, and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Okay, we've had record high prices for oil, which means you have to pay more, but you don't want to pay more. But if you drive, you have to. So many of you are saying, nuts to this, I'm not driving as much, or words to that effect. You may prefer expletives. So demand for gasoline is falling. So the price of gasoline at the pump is not falling. In fact, it's still rising. I don't know why this is, but it annoys me. CBS News business correspondent Alexis Christophorus is here with a lesson in energy economics, and I want you to pay attention because there will be a quiz at the end. Alexis, why are crude prices down?
Last month, we saw crude top out at $135 a barrel. Now we're at about $122 a barrel. A big reason for that is that inventories continue to grow because demand is starting to slip.
So the thinking is eventually lower demand will mean lower prices at the pump, eventually. Also, eventually, planet Earth will be swallowed up by a dying sun, and it's hard to say which will happen first. Alexis, what about other oil-guzzling nations?
Both India and Malaysia cut their fuel subsidies, so in essence, they effectively raised retail oil prices. And a lot of people believe these subsidies are going to choke off demand for oil in developing countries, and so overall global demand for oil will drop. And that's going to bring prices down.
Now, did you pay close attention? Because here's that pop quiz. Are you happy about the amount you're paying to fill up your car? A, yes, I am, Sam. I also enjoy dropping bricks on my own foot. B, no, Sam. How stupid are you? C, can I borrow $50 so I can fill up and drive home? Class dismissed. The Osgood File. Sam Litzinger on the CBS Radio Network.
Sun Street Centers now offers low-cost transitional housing for men in sobriety. Simply maintain a program of recovery and have 30 days of sobriety to qualify. These apartments are fully furnished with a large kitchen, living room, dining area, cable TV, and laundry. Sun Street is now taking applicants. Seven Suns Transitional Housing for Men with a sincere commitment to their recovery at a low cost. Call 753-5145, 753-5145 to apply. Sun Street Centers in Salinas.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And a good afternoon to you. A good afternoon to you. Peter B. Collins not here today. He is at the National Conference for Media Reform in Minneapolis, and we'll hear from him during the third hour of the program and find out what he's doing up there and what all of our colleagues are doing up there in Minneapolis this year. I'm Peter Laufer, pleased to be sitting in his chair these 3 hours and pleased to have you listening and participating as we talk about the issues of the day. Right now with my friend and colleague Marcos Kounoulakis and my co-author, the book is Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush
Era. The foreword is by Will Durst, probably well known to many of you, the stand-up political comedian. And the book is published by Polypoint Press in Sausalito. Marcos, during the break, I was talking with engineer Brian Urban here at the Peter B. Collins Show, and we'll get to these voices specifically, some of the voices in the book, as we discussed, you know, in a moment. But this is intriguing because he was reacting to what we were saying about how any president, whomever it is who comes in next, is going to look good. And he said something that I think is of concern. He says that might be the right initially, but the problems are going to be so severe, it's hard to imagine the next president being more than a one-term president and just being subsumed by the phenomenal crises that are going to follow the Bush presidency.
Well, you know, that is the concern, right? And that is the challenge. The problems are massive, whether they be economic problems with all this treasure we've spent in the last 8 years, or clearly our foreign adventure.
Sure, and Barack Obama made it so clear the other night in St. Paul when he said there are no good options.
Yes, and you know, he's been very good in general by saying, look, I'm not a perfect person. And I think he's been setting the appropriate tone as far as expectations. And what he's really doing, which this president failed to do, which is acknowledge that we're facing serious crises, and saying we as Americans need to also sacrifice, need to understand that we need to do something collectively, not just go shopping, or not, you know, which was what the Bush administration, George Bush, specifically.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Two of the things, as long as we're just postmorteming this already, two of the things that for me were the most reprehensible early on after September 11th, 2001, that Bush said, the first, what you just quoted, go shopping. That's the way to deal with this problem. And the other, when he said, and erroneously now as we look back on it, we're going to find them and kill them. Not some sort of due process, but yeah, we're going to find them and kill them. And it for me, and I become somewhat speechless, these last, what will be 8 years soon, have been examples of the diametrical opposite of what speaks America to me and what these voices in the book are saying. Even those with whom you and I disagree politically and socially, we do agree in terms of the broad definition of the American dream.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting you should point out that second outspoken message that Bush had, which was find them and kill them, right? And we expect from our leaders to be on an elevated plane, to take us up with them rather than to bring us down to our base sort of level. And, you know, there was an awful lot of anger and fear after that September 11th event. And I think, you know, many people were interested in finding them and killing them. I mean, there was a great sense of a desire for retribution. And I think at that point is when you really expect the leadership to take us to a place where we don't want to go viscerally.
Yes, and I think that there's a problem that results from the crassness, the coarseness of the behavior of the White House, of the administration. And it is important. The semantics are important. You've corrected me a few times in social arenas and news reporting venues when I've said the government. It isn't the government. It's the administration. The government is solid. Our form of government, it's the administration that we're talking about, the Bush administration, and it's an important slip not to make. But I think that there is a moral trickle-down reality to what these criminals have done, and I watch it in my neighborhood in Sonoma County, California, where in the last several years there has been an exponential increase in the number of police shootings that have resulted in the death of suspects. And I think, there's nothing scientific about this, but I think when you have the president talking about finding them and killing them, and then you have the trained police forces concerned about what's happening on the streets of communities, the not even just the rogue cops, but the police are going to be influenced the civil police are going to be influenced by that kind of talk from the commander-in-chief.
It's interesting. I'd be interested in seeing a study on what's happened over these last 8 years regarding that. And maybe on our radio program, we can get someone along those lines who can tell us. Because really what you've identified is that in our modern world, the state has a monopoly on the implements and the tools of violence. And so how the tone that it sets for the use of that violence is likely to, as you say, trickle down. So I would not be surprised if your anecdotal stories here would also bear out in some factual fashion.
Yeah, well, it will be nice to have a president who at least will be saying the kinds of things that we can appreciate as something to which we would want to aspire. Even the guy who I really hope doesn't get elected, John McCain,
yes,
at least his rhetoric has some elegance and has a sympathy to a greater common good. The current guy and his cabal for 8 years have been just coarse and crass.
Yeah, and the second part of it, which you didn't say about John McCain, is that, of course, his personal story, too, is one that we can look at and feel good about because he really has reflected a level of patriotism in his life that it's hard to really feel bad about. But when you compare it to, of course, the guy who's currently in the office in the White House, there is no comparable personal story that speaks to us in this broader sense of either patriotism or of honor.
20 minutes before the hour on the Peter B. Collins program, I'm Peter Laufer, talking with my co-author, Marcos Kounoulakis. Our book is Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era. Marcos, what's one of your favorites in this book of conversations that we've had with cultural and political leaders over the last couple of years?
Well, you might be surprised because while we have these great folks who are leaders and newsmakers and celebrities and the like, I actually found the one where we had Jason Blair,
yes,
the discredited New York Times reporter caught for lying on the program. I found that one a fascinating conversation.
As did I. I'm not sure it's my favorite, but fascinating. And what about the chat we had with him intrigued you? For one thing, what intrigued me was that the guy came to our microphone at all and was ready to talk. Well, I'm about to say he was ready to talk candidly, but somebody who's such a pathological liar maybe wasn't talking candidly.
That's right. And what I found fascinating was that he has actually broken down the idea of lying to a he's looked back and said, okay, here are the types of lies that you can tell, and here are the victims of lies, and there are victimless lies, and has actually parsed the whole concept of lying and the act of lying to really identify the different players within the lie, how they're affected.
Yeah, and he speaks to that. Let me just read that one line.
Sure.
Where he speaks to that particularly. There are certain lies that, this is the voice of Jason Blair, there are certain lies that, if you take a look at the stories I wrote, he, Jason Blair, were lies that hurt editors. There were lies that hurt other reporters who flew on the reputation of the Times. There were lies that hurt me. There were lies that hurt the subject of the stories to varying degrees, and for some of the people who were written about, it didn't bother them at all, but it bothered the journalistic community tremendously. And other ones didn't really bother journalists at all, but really actually caused harm to the people who were being written about. And we said back to him, you've got quite a burden there. And he said, right. And we asked him, does that wake you up? Do you stare at the ceiling at 4 in the morning thinking about this? And his answer was, no. Amazing guy. Why is it so fun for us to talk to these kinds of people?
Well, you know, in this case, for instance, here's a guy who was on all over the news for at least a couple of news cycles and who really focused the attention of the national spotlight on journalism, its ethics, its practice, everything, you know, and media in general. And suddenly, you know, we all wonder sort of what happened to that guy. Or maybe we don't, but certainly you and I do, Peter.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons we invite people like him, people like Gore Vidal. We recently had Rod McEwen, or you had Rod McEwen recently on the radio program. voices from who have had a tremendous impact on our culture, on our society, on our politics, and are sometimes not really referred to anymore. And we need to go back to these voices oftentimes to get a coarse understanding of where we are today.
Absolutely. On the facade of the National Archives in Washington, D.C., between the Capitol building and the White House, famously, is the legend, "Past is Prologue." And we move so fast in this culture. We were talking earlier this hour, Marcos, about how one of the licenses or mandates or opportunities of being an American is to perpetually reinvent ourselves if we wish. One of the dangers of that reinvention is that we can be moving so fast that we're not paying attention to the lessons of the past, and also that we miss some of the values of those who came before this very minute. The intensity of what we have come to refer to as the 24-hour news cycle makes it so that somebody who's being sought, 5,000 reporters camped out at Michael Jackson's ranch, becomes somebody that you can pick up the phone, dial up, and say hi to just weeks later.
That's right. And that's the opportunity that we've really tried to take advantage of, right, is that there are people who have great value to our society, our politics, our culture, who are being untapped in terms of their resources and their ideas. And we try very, very assiduously to bring those voices back into the public realm and to share them. And what we've done here in this book, Hope is a Tattered Flag, is to collect some of the more eclectic ones and some of the more profound ones and present those ideas in a condensed, intelligent form.
Yeah, and something else that we do, and here we're patting each other on the back.
Yeah, we are.
What
a
great
bit.
Job we do. But heck, it's our book, and Peter Collins gave us an hour of his radio show to talk about it, and we think it's valuable. And so we'll take advantage of this, and sometime we'll return the favor to Peter B. Collins. But at any rate, Hope is a Tattered Flag, the book by me, Peter Laufer, and Marcos Kounoulakis. One of the other things that we pride ourselves on doing is not just finding these voices that perhaps have been passed by and shouldn't be, but also going after them and other voices very much in the day's news.
Yes.
With tangential conversations and questions that are unexpected. We like to think that when they come on our program and are in our book, that they aren't being asked the kinds of questions that allow them to answer with the talking points that their media training has filled them with.
Yeah, in fact, we try to get far away from those talking points.
Indeed we do. It's the Peter B. Collins program. I'm Peter Laufer, talking with Marcos Kounoulakis about our book, Hope is a Tattered Flag. Coming up next hour, C.D. Jaco talks about globalization from the heartland, and Jeff Kamen about a new news product, the American News Project. Meanwhile, we'll continue to bring you voices of reason and change for the post-Bush era here on the Peter B. Collins program.
Listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
Not here today, but we'll hear from him during the third hour of his program. I'm Peter Lawford, pleased to be sitting in his chair on this beautiful San Francisco day, and pleased to have on the line my co-author, Marcos Kunalakis. Our book is Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era. You're welcome to go to hopeisatatteredflag.com. To learn more about the book. It's published by Polypoint Press in Sausalito, available nationwide at booksellers near you and from Amazon. Marcos, the book is filled with, you know, I just realized right now that I haven't counted it. How many conversations that we've had? Do you have any idea how many?
I think there are 50.
50, okay, 50 conversations. And one of my favorites is, in fact, as we continue with this incestuous behavior, the editor-in-chief of Washington Monthly Magazine, our friend and colleague Paul Glastras. And Paul Glastras was a speechwriter for Bill Clinton during Bill Clinton's presidency. And one of the things that we, you and I both believe in, I know I can speak for you because we've talked about this so much together, is to reach across that aisle, whatever it is, and however many aisles there are, to talk with those who hold other points of view and try to come up with solutions to problems and just talk about life with people who don't necessarily agree with us. One of the things we do in the book is to embrace those that we would not necessarily be meeting otherwise. And Paul Glastras explains in our conversation with him how he and other Clinton speechwriters did that very directly regarding a predecessor president. Do you want to tell that story?
Well, I mean, Paul Glastras was saying is that they stole shamelessly from the Reagan speeches because he was so masterful. And so during the Clinton years, you can find glimpses, if you look carefully at the way that they wrote those speeches, at much of the rhetoric and certainly the cadences that were used by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, we cribbed like crazy from Ronald Reagan, he said. Anything wrong with that?
I don't think so. I mean, what you're talking about is technique, and you're talking about ideas, and certainly, you know, when you think back in an odd way to the Reagan years, they're starting to look like, you know, fairly liberal times.
Yeah, it's funny to do that and look back at Nixon and realize that
He provided the opening to China, for good or for bad, and he developed the Environmental Protection Agency. Some of his domestic policies were downright, to use your terminology for Washington Monthly Magazine, neoliberal.
Yeah, and as you go back to Reagan, you think about the earned income tax credit, the way that Ronald Reagan actually saved Social Security instead of attacked it.
Yeah, so are we going to be looking back in a few years at these wonderful positive developments that occurred during the George W. Bush administration? I think not.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think that's really, history is somewhat fickle, but there are certain standards by which it has to operate regardless.
No question. And we're often referred to as journalists as those who write the first draft of history. And that is not a disparaging or derogatory comment. We are out there learning stuff that will be interpreted and reinterpreted and analyzed and reanalyzed for years to come. But there are some basic realities we all know, along with 75% of the American people now who reject the policies of the Bush administration.
Yeah, he's going to be looked back as someone who really, I believe firmly, had a failed presidency, an uncurious person who really was unopen, was not open to the multiple resources and ideas available to anyone who sits in the Oval Office, and instead really propagated and propounded a very singularly focused and simplistic series of policies.
Sure. I mean, you can tell just how lucky we were in terms of collecting these 50 or so phenomenal Americans that we speak with in the conversations that are in the book, Hope is a Tattered Flag, how relatively easy it is to find people of extraordinary character, intellect, and learning to study with, and he didn't do that. Another one in the book is Theodore Sorensen, who's out with his own book now, his memoir of his years with John F. Kennedy. And when we talked with him, he was on the telephone. He wasn't in the studio with us, but it really felt as if he started to cry.
Yeah, he was very emotional about this, because he hadn't, as you recall and as you'll see in the book, he hadn't read aloud bits and pieces of these speeches in quite many, many years. And so when he was brought back to the rhetoric and to the man who had actually brought life to those words, it really was a very emotional moment for him.
Yeah. Hope is a Tattered Flag is the name of the book. Marcos Kounoulakis is the co-author with me, Peter Laufer. It's published by Polypoint Press. You can check it out at hopeisatatteredflag.com. Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones, said some nice things about us, Marcos. In this rich collection of interviews with a superb cast of thinkers and mavericks, Kounoulakis and Laufer remind us of the magic that is America. The spontaneity of these conversations rolls perfectly into a book that lends itself to reflection, action, and hope. That sounds worth reading.
Yeah, boy, who is this guy?
That was Jay Harris talking, the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine. It's a pleasure talking with you on the radio, as it is every week when we talk on Washington Monthly on the radio. Marcos, those who listen to the Peter B. Collins Show and who might want to catch our show can check out washingtonmonthly.net to hear our past shows and find out where the current ones can be heard. Thank you for joining me here today for us to absolutely shamelessly pimp our book.
Yes, that's what we did, but please say hello to Peter B. for me.
I shall, and I will do that this afternoon when he joins his show in the third hour. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter Laufer sitting in for Peter B. Collins.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The mastermind of 9/11 wants the death penalty.
This first military court appearance by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was both dramatic and also bizarre.
Heads roll after Air Force nuclear mistakes.
The top general and the top civilian both fired. I'm Dan Raviv in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. For the first time since his capture 5 years ago, the self-described mastermind of the 9/11 terrorist attacks appeared before a military tribunal at Guantanamo Bay. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr was there as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, sparred with the judge.
KSM, who the CIA admits was subjected to waterboarding, questioned the legitimacy of the military hearing. For 5 years they torture, he said. After the torturing, they transfer us to Inquisition land in Guantanamo. The judge warned KSM against representing himself, reminding the accused terror chief that he and his colleagues are charged with killing nearly 3,000 Americans, and they could be sentenced to death. That is what I wish, Mohammed calmly responded. I wish to be martyred for a long time.
Four alleged co-conspirators also heard the charges against them, all asked to represent themselves but did not enter pleas. Now this.
Oh, he did.
Hey!
Hey, where are you going?
I thought I'd go over to Home Depot.
Oh, what do we need?
Maybe we'll figure it out when we get there.
It's time to remember where Dad goes when he doesn't have to go anywhere. The Home Depot, where you'll find his perfect Father's Day gift, like a Brinkman 4-burner gas grill for just $199, or give him a Home Depot gift card. The Home Depot, proud sponsor of Father's Day. U.S. only. See store for details.
In spring, love is in the air. And so are a lot of other things, like pollen, dust, and that old romance killer, ragweed. So if you want to be able to see the love light in her eyes, or his eyes, make sure you get Clear Eyes Itchy Eye Relief. It clears up itchy, red, and watery eyes, so that nothing comes between you and amore. Mm. Want Clear Eyes? Get Clear Eyes brand Itchy Eye Relief. Use as directed.
A big shakeup for the Air Force. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has that.
For the first time, the civilian chief and the military head of a branch of the armed forces have together been fired. The reason? Standards have been slipping. Mistakes include transporting nuclear-tipped missiles over U.S. territory and wrongly shipping missile parts to Taiwan.
The stewardship of our nuclear deterrent is the most sensitive mission that we have.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates adding he has high respect for these men, but he forced Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn and General Michael Mosley to resign to send a wake-up call. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
A Senate Intelligence Committee report says the Bush administration led the nation to war in Iraq on false pretenses, exaggerating Saddam Hussein's terrorist connections. Barack Obama returned to the campaign trail today, attacking John McCain's health insurance tax credits on a swing through Virginia.
Like George Bush, John McCain has a plan to only take care of the healthy and the wealthy.
Obama deflected reporters' questions about a running mate.
We're not going to do it in the press, and we're not going to do it through surrogates. So the next time you hear from me about the
the vice presidential selection process will be when I have selected a vice president.
More from CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss.
With Hillary Clinton waiting until Saturday to formally end her presidential campaign, some of her backers keep pushing to get her on the ticket. New York Democrat Charlie Rangel says Obama shouldn't fear her as a running mate.
Well, it's just the question of uniting the party and moving forward, picking up Republicans and independents and winning.
Rangel acknowledges it's not wise to try to pressure Obama to pick Clinton, but says he thinks given how close the race was, it's the right thing to do. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
A top aide to Clinton says she is not actively seeking the number two spot on the ticket and will do whatever she's asked to do to help the Democrats win in November. John McCain continues to push his plan for town hall debates with Obama.
I've learned more at town hall meetings than any participant other than me could have had. It's the way you get in touch with people. It's really one of our oldest forms of the democratic process.
After trending lower, the price of crude oil shot up $6 today to $128.22 a barrel. It's not about supply and demand. It's about the value of the dollar. Indications that the European Central Bank will raise interest rates sent the greenback lower, reducing its purchasing power so it takes more bucks to buy a barrel. Prices are creeping higher at the gas pump.
As of today, AAA's daily fuel gauge report shows we are slightly more than a penny away from hitting $4 per gallon on a nationwide average basis.
AAA's Jeff Sundstrom. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Ever seen the way a squirrel hoards acorns? Well, that's how I am with Travel Rewards, especially now that I'm getting 1,000 choice privileges bonus points every time I stay at Econo Lodge and Rodeway Inn hotels. Just book at choicehotels.com, then start loading up on your reward points. Best of all, you don't even need stretchy cheeks. Visit choicehotels.com to book your stay with Econo Lodge or Rodeway Inn and start hoarding away.
Members earn bonus points when paying qualifying rates. Reservations must be made at choicehotels.com with arrival between 6-1 and 8-1408. For details, visit choicehotels.com.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25%, too. From June 5th through the 9th, it's a summer savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save, only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Well, it may be Peter B's America, but it's not Peter B. Collins today. It's me, Peter Lauffer, happy to be sitting in for Peter B. Collins this afternoon and to be talking with you. Wherever you are listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, up there in Montana, in Washington, in Seattle, in Portland, in Oregon, Coos Bay up in Oregon, Eureka here in California, San Francisco, Monterey, whatever station you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show on. I'm glad you're listening, and we will continue to provide you with information and maybe even a little entertainment this afternoon to help inform you and divert you with any luck. And to start that off this hour, I'm pleased to welcome to the Peter B. Collins program my friend and colleague, the journalist Charles Jaco, who is in St. Louis, where he's headquartered now. C.D., welcome to the Peter B. Collins program.
Boy, they'll hire anybody to fill in for this guy, won't they?
Well, you know, it was short notice. And I was in the neighborhood.
How are you, man? Great to talk to you again.
It is great to talk with you, and we should pull back the curtain, whatever is left of it, and continue with the transparency that I was engaged with the hour before, talking with my friend and colleague and co-author Marcos Kounoulakis, and tell the audience that you and I have loved and hated each other for about 20 years now,
oh,
or more.
More than that, Bonehead.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely
we
right.
We go back to Reagan's first term.
That's right. We're talking about...
In Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
So Yeah, we're the only two people they could, NBC Radio could have ever sent to Bolivia to do a cocaine documentary, and we end up fighting over the microphone. It's my turn. No, it's my turn. Give me that mic back.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment that luckily was chronicled by no one, so that when we tell the story on ourselves, at least
we're in charge of it. Yeah, it's fine, but no, we were just kidding. It never really happened.
Yeah, but it absolutely did. In fact, bringing that up, it's a nice way to give us some heritage together and some background on the kind of work we do, and that was in the early 80s when we went down to Bolivia into the Amazon jungle where the coca leaf is grown and traced that coca leaf until it became crack cocaine on the streets of East Oakland when we went out with the Oakland Police Crack Cocaine Task Force. And that was an amazing experience. And the part of it, well, there are so many, we could talk for the whole hour about that, and we're not going to. But the part of it that I think about with some kind of perverse satisfaction is when we were helping the farmer and his wife, pregnant with the 13th kid.
She was pregnant, had a billion children already.
All billion children.
They lived in this thing that looked like a two-story lean-to.
Corrugated tin roof.
She was preggers, and she knew something was wrong, as women who are pregnant tend to do, and didn't have the cash to get into Cochabamba, I believe.
Yeah, it was Cochabamba that she would need to go
to
the hospital to get some prenatal care. Now, as we were learning this, you and I were helping the farmer spread out the coca leaves to dry in the sun, and I've gone through the NBC style book and guideline for correspondence many times, and I didn't see a direct reference to whether or not we violated anything by doing that.
No, we're unindicted co-conspirators, which puts us in great company in this country.
It does indeed. And there she was in need of this prenatal care in a country where the dollar at that time, and probably still, went extraordinarily far. Just because of the proximity, Lord knows there are any number of millions of women in South America in the same kind of crisis condition. But there she was. She was ours, and we provided the money for the taxi fare to get her into town. And you want to describe that taxi?
An open-back truck, as I recall.
That's right.
But, you know, she got in there, and we heard, I believe, later that the kid was born fine, 10 fingers, 10 toes. I forget what we told NBC the money was for. I think we told them it was for taxi fare, but we didn't exactly spell out how the taxi fare was spent.
No, it was a great pleasure not only to help her.
So it was General Electric's money.
Exactly.
So.
It was a great pleasure to not only help her, but put it on our expense account.
And we did.
So that's the kind of history that Charles Jaco and I share. And now he is back where he started because Missouri is your home state.
Well, I'm in my home state. Yeah, I'm in St. Louis now at KTVI, where the Fox-owned television station. Out here, and of course and I believe this is what you called me about, although God knows we can end up talking about anything.
We can talk about anything, but yes, I'll tell you what I called you about in a second, but before before I do, the Fox-owned television station. Now, I know that Peter B. Collins runs a program that caters to the other side in terms of what people think about often when they think about Fox. But you've told me, and I've seen your work, that the Fox-owned television stations, and particularly yours in St. Louis, doesn't mean the same kind of thing as Bill O'Reilly screaming, shut up, shut up, shut up.
No, it's completely different. They pretty much keep our hands off of us, which is a darn good thing. And, you know, we're free to do what we want to do. We just happen to be, you know, owned by Rupert Murdoch.
And well, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. One
everybody
argue.
Takes a paycheck from someone, but there's no editorial control. So we're pretty much free to do whatever we will without any sort of political spin, which is nice for a change. In fact, I wouldn't be working here if it was otherwise. So, you know, it's good.
Good. And one of the things that I've talked about on various radio shows that I do in recent years is a newfound or a refound appreciation for the Heartland. I've been doing a lot of work in Chicago recently, in Kansas City, in Minneapolis. I've come down to see you in St. Louis, and I travel with the chauvinism of somebody from one of the coasts, and particularly the arrogance of a San Franciscan, and all you flyover guys, we just dismiss.
That touches wave at us. Hi.
Yeah, there you are. But there is something about these Heartland cities that were so well established in the 19th century.
I can tell you what it is.
Please.
Humidity.
Duh.
We have plenty of it. In fact, we export it.
Yeah, but there's something else there. There's a sense in St. Louis, in Kansas City, in Minneapolis, in Chicago of we're here, we're getting things done. We don't need to be pretentious about it and talk about it. We're just doing it.
Yeah, plus there's always that sort of, you know, Midwestern diffidence, you know, I don't want to talk about what I'm doing. How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's just the way people are. I mean, you don't get far in this part of the world being a real head case. You have to move for that.
And you often have to move out to our neighborhood, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But an example of that really comes from some of the heritage companies that do business and have done business and were founded in these types of cities. And the one that is so connected with St. Louis is what we're going to talk about today, and that's Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah. Founded here, God, before the Civil War. You know, it's been around forever, sort of like, you know, Wells Fargo Corporation in San Fran.
Right.
They've been around forever, and now is in the process of fending off bids, and I don't think it's going to be able to fend them off very long.
Now, why is that? What put that company in the position of being faced with suitors that it doesn't necessarily want?
Globalization and a stagnant stock price. The price, the per share price of Anheuser-Busch has moved between 45 and 55 bucks. Oh, for most of the last decade. A lot of people feel it should be a lot higher. Comes this company called InBev, which is a consortium of a Brazilian-Belgian conglomerate, and are going to make offers between $65 and $70 a share. Well, you know, you whip out your abacus, and you realize you're getting paid like a 15, 20% premium over the highest point the stock's been in a decade. You know, I would imagine the board of directors of Anheuser-Busch would be impeached, certainly thrown out of office, if they didn't accept it. So, there's a feeling around here that even though the offer has not formally been made yet, it's a fait accompli, and one of the reasons is that Anheuser-Busch is still the big dog in the yard when it comes to domestic beer sales, but it's a global marketplace now, and they have not done exceptionally well except in China.
Except in China.
In China, Anheuser-Busch is ruling the roost. Neither InBev nor their other competitor, SAB Miller, which just got the clearance today to buy Coors, have been able to do much there.
Well, we're going to look at Budweiser as an example of globalization and what it means to the heartland as we continue talking with you for a while longer. Charles Jaco. And you know how this radio stuff works. I don't think on Fox Television you probably don't have commercials on Fox Television in St. Louis.
They all have the Deutschland Über Alles soundtrack underneath them. So, you know, we sell Freedom Fries and, you know, that sort of thing.
17 minutes after the hour on the Peter B. Collins program, I'm Peter Laufer talking with Charles Jaco, the journalist in St. Louis. We're talking about how globalization hits the heartland and what's happening to your Miller Lite. No, your Bud Light. That's right. We already talked about what happened to your Miller Lite and what that means to St. Louis. And we'll do all of that momentarily here on the Peter B. Collins program.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Well, good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. The good news right now, no accidents to tell you about in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Salinas. Just one stall. It's in Soquel, 41st Avenue at Soquel Drive. Car ran out of gas. That's blocking one of the lanes there. Already getting reports of heavy traffic southbound, one from the Fishhook out to about 41st Avenue in Capitola. 17 itself as you go through the Santa Cruz Mountains. Currently no stalls or accidents to tell you about. Some brake lights forming southbound 101 getting out of South San Jose from Coyote Creek Golf Drive down into the Morgan Hill area, but 101 making your way through Salinas, currently checking in problem-free. This is brought to you by your neighborhood Ace Hardware. Shop the Ace Big Daddy Sale with great ideas for every dad. Hurry in. The sale is today through Monday at Ace, the helpful place. Now, if you spot a traffic problem, let us know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
You are listening to the Peter B. Collins program. Yeah. Peter Lauffer. Whoa, who's that guy? I'm Peter Lauffer, sitting in for Peter B. Collins, who's off in Minneapolis. And we will hear from him next hour and find out what he's doing up there. By the way, if you wish to correspond with me, you are welcome to by writing to me, Peter Lauffer, L-A-U-F-E-R, Peter Lauffer at peterlauffer.com. Hooked up with us is my friend and colleague Charles Jaco in St. Louis, Missouri, where he works currently, and we're talking about globalization and how it can affect all of us when we least expect it. So along comes this foreign company, Charles, and they see something, especially maybe because their currency has a nice value compared with the dollar that looks enticing. They offer Anheuser Busch more money than the stock is worth. The company is in a position where it's going to be very hard pressed not to sell it. Who cares besides the stockholders? This is big news for St. Louis.
Well, I mean,
negative,
it's huge,
right?
It's huge news for St. Louis because you have a corporation here. And look, I've got to say up front that I'm a beer snob, so I'm not a particular fan of Anheuser Busch products.
You got a problem with Bud Light, you know, it's a fine,
every time
fine
I hold
product
up a glass of this stuff, I have to look at it and tell the bartender, excuse me, I think this horse has diabetes. Anyway, the point is that while I'm not a great fan of their products, their corporate good works in areas like this are sort of a model for, profit-driven, but also community-conscious corporate governance.
For example?
Well, they've given tens of millions of dollars to St. Louis University to set up an eye treatment center for exotic eye diseases that kids from the third world might suffer from, and inner-city kids in the United States. They give tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to charities not only here but all over the country. I mean, their corporate largesse is pretty darn big.
And then there's some other stuff that they do that isn't necessarily largesse, but it is civic involvement, the stadium, Busch Gardens.
Oh, yeah, that kind of stuff. And our understanding, and, you know, look, it's a global marketplace. No one argues that. And when you're dealing in commodities, whether it's coal or beer or, you know, just about anything else you can think of, in a global marketplace, bigger is better. Today, the Justice Department just cleared the way for SAB Miller, SAB meaning South African Brewing, which now owns Miller, to buy Coors. InBev comes after Anheuser-Busch. I mean,
there's no national security issue here with beer, apparently.
Apparently not. But, you know, what's interesting about this is that a couple of international investment banks have calculated that in order to make the InBev bid for Anheuser-Busch make sense, that they would have to cut $1.4 billion from Anheuser-Busch's budget almost immediately.
And so you guys in St. Louis are worried that the philanthropic part of the company is going to take a hit. Why are you worried about that?
Well, we're not worried about it. We know for a fact it's
probably
going to go away.
How do you know it for a fact?
It's probably just going to vanish. All these ancillary things are going to be spun off. And, you know, there are two ways to handle this. One is, and many people in an older industrial city like St. Louis would do this, which is wring their hands and bemoan, you know, the decline of a once great city and yet another corporate headquarters leaving.
Youngstown model.
And the rest of them, right. And the rest of the folks will just kind of dust off their britches and say, okay, if this is reality, you know, how do we make lemonade out of all these lemons?
And how do you make lemonade out of foreigners
Pretty
coming
easy.
In and buying
you,
a company?
You approach InBev and say, look, y'all are going to face a monstrous hurdle in the United States Senate with this iconic blue-collar international brand, Budweiser, being sold to a foreign company. So why not change the name of InBev to Anheuser-Busch, and why not move the corporate headquarters from Brussels to St. Louis, and we can pretty well guarantee you a lot of those problems would go away. And that's probably what's going to happen.
Now, when we talked earlier off the air to set up this opportunity to chat now, you said that it's a bit of a false front, the European headquarters. This company is a Brazilian
company.
Oh, yeah,
this company is run by the Brazilians, pure and simple. InBev was created in 2004 in a merger between two companies, one giant brewer in Brazil and one in Brussels. And the Brazilians still run the show. But they gave the Belgians, you know, their own CEO, and they moved the headquarters to Brussels. They didn't care because they just created this new company, and they knew they still ran it. Well, past being prologue, we figure, all right, let's have them move the international corporate headquarters here. You know, you still lose 1,000 jobs or so, but you've certainly got a chance for future growth rather than sitting around and wringing your hands. And I think this is the lesson that a lot of these heartland cities have taken from forward-looking areas like the left coast there, which is, you know, okay, you stare the future square in the face and you deal with it. You don't try to deny reality. You try to make reality the best deal you can possibly get. And
so are you already seeing this? You're seeing civic leaders lobbying?
You're seeing civically. I mean, everybody here is still kind of gnashing their teeth and rending their garments, which is a hell of a scene at rush hour.
I imagine.
but they're trying to do this, you know, muy suave in a back channel in order to do this. And I think the lesson here that makes this, you know, less of a parochial St. Louis story, because God knows I love the town, but I'm not sure anybody in San Francisco gives a rip.
Well, I do. I like St. Louis.
You,
but yes, we are looking at it as an example.
Anyway,
yes.
Is that there's a lesson here on globalization, which is people can scream and yell all they want to about how NAFTA was the work of the Trilateral Commission or globalization is killing babies or, you know, whatever. And, you know, a lot of that may be true. But at the end of the day, it's here. It's not going away. You are not going to retreat back to the days, as much as I'm, you know, a locavore and like to, you know, buy locally produced food and goods and beer and that sort of thing. You're not going to go back to the days when everything you consume was produced within a 50-mile radius.
No, but one of the things that's really intriguing about these two huge beer deals is not just that these companies are being sold, Coors and Bud, and not just that they're being sold to foreigners, but that they're being sold to South Africa and Brazil. I mean, you talk about emblematic stuff mm-hmm. regarding the end of the American century. Adios.
Well, I mean, and part of it may be just temporary in that under the president's watch the value of the U.S. dollar against, you know, other currencies, like the euro, for example, is half what it was when Bush took office.
It's impossible for people in Europe, whether they be corporations or individuals, not to look at the bargain basement.
I mean,
that
you
is
look
the
at
United
the United States.
States
and you don't see a Statue of Liberty, you see a giant Walmart sign.
Yeah.
You know, that's flashing, hey, we're on sale and we're cheap. Well, I mean, that certainly enters into it. It certainly enters into however much you're paying, $4.50, $4.25 a gallon for gasoline. That's one of the big reasons. You know, the dollar's worth squat. And it's the same reason for this. These American companies are exceptionally attractive.
And with that, we have to say adios ourselves. Charles Jaco, my friend and colleague, the journalist in St. Louis, thank you for this lesson in global economics.
And I'm glad to see you're working again.
Well, I try to every once in a while.
Later, dude.
The beer is on me when I come to see you in St. Louis. Peter B. Collins, off today. I'm Peter Lauffer. Pleased to be sitting in for him. More momentarily.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
How does it make you feel? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. If you're a black American, you know there's one question every white person wants to ask you. How does the success of Barack Obama make you feel? Even if you don't get asked today, get your answer ready, because if he wins in November, you will surely get asked. I don't know how black folks put up with it. Nobody went around asking white people how we related racially to the first white astronaut walking on the moon. Nobody asked white people how we related racially when John McCain became the oldest white man to get the Republican nomination. Everybody seems to have concluded that Barack Obama's defining characteristic is being half black. Well, that's what made him news, no doubt about it, but it's not what made him successful. His mother was an anthropologist who raised him in a house full of books, who, if the moon was full, would wake him up to come outside and admire it, who valued education, who searched for God, who drilled him on his multiplication tables, and who, as a result, raised a son smart enough to go to Columbia and Harvard. He is also by nature an ambitious man, willing to put in 18-hour days to get what he wants, and is married to a Princeton-educated lawyer who is more than willing to take him down a notch if he gets too full of himself. Does this mean black people can now rise to within reach of the most powerful office in America? Absolutely. If they're raised to value education, are brilliant, ambitious, work like crazy, and have a smart and supportive spouse. Kind of like that first astronaut. Now this.
So, where do you get the gift that keeps on giving? Advance Auto Parts. Here's how it works. You buy a gift card at Advance and load it up from $5 to $500. You give it. They get it. And then it keeps on giving their car fresh oil, brake pads, wiper blades, air filters, spark plugs, shocks, batteries, everything. It's the most important tool in their wallet. And it's how you're going to help them turn their car into a harder working, better performing, and more reliable vehicle. Whatever you're working on, Advance will help you keep the wheels turning.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras, whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Good afternoon to you. I cannot speak as rapidly as that fellow. I'm Peter Lauffer, pleased to be sitting in Peter B. Collins' chair here and babysitting his program for him while he's in Minneapolis today. He'll be checking in next hour, and we'll find out what he's doing up there. In the meantime, I am pleased to introduce you out there in Peter B.'s audience to a friend and colleague of mine, Jeff Kamen, who is a journalist on the line from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. In case you weren't paying attention in civics class, Jeff Kamen, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter B. Lauffer. I have to tell you, Barack Obama has already started kicking serious Democratic Party butt. He has, in the last few hours, forbidden the Democratic National Committee from taking any more money from lobbyists or political action committees.
Wow, so you're giving us some breaking news from Washington.
That's what you pay me for.
Well, yes, it is, and a pittance it is. I'm not exactly sure what it is I pay you, but we appreciate the breaking news. Now, I asked you to come on Peter B. Collins' show not just because we're friends and colleagues, but because you've been involved with the startup of an intriguing news-gathering project that just went live, as we broadcasters tend to say. And before we tell folks what it is and you explain something about it, and in fact we'll have an example of it here to play on the air, one of the things that I've found intriguing that's happened the last few years, and you and I have talked about it. I've been doing some guest lecturing at San Francisco State University, and this has been to entry-level, lower division humanities classes, and I've started the classes because I wanted to talk about things that are in the news by saying, who read the New York Times today? And then I was initially chastened by the professor and said, who whispered in my ear and said, you know, you might not want to say the New York Times. You might want to just talk about newspapers. And so I asked, to make this very long story short, I asked who was reading newspapers, and it was just about nil. And this meets with what we in the industry have recognized. But there has been this expectation that's because people have been moving over to the Internet to get their news. What I've learned in the classroom as I've been asking this question is that people, many of them, at least those I've talked with in San Francisco State, at San Francisco State, they're not migrating to the Internet to get their news. They're no longer getting much news. And in the face of this reality, you got involved in something called the American News Project. What is that?
And it's easy to find, folks, if you are online right now. You can multitask at newsproject, all one word, newsproject.org. It is remarkable. It is the brainchild of another genius in media named Nick Penniman, and it is extraordinarily high-end, high-quality broadcast journalism, but on the web.
Now this is not what we usually see, which is something that was on NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, wherever, and then has a net application. This
right.
is only for the net. It's not being broadcast in any traditional sense.
At this point, but don't be surprised if the stuff winds up on your local PBS station, probably in pretty short order, or marketed elsewhere, even though it's a nonprofit at this point. The big deal is, by the way, I think your experience at San Francisco State may be a little oddball. Maybe there's a building there at San Francisco State where they simply pump THC into the air before people go into their class.
Nah. I won't accept that prejudice, and this is an unscientific study I'm conducting, no question, at least so far, and it's anecdotal, but I'm hearing this over and over again. There isn't this migration, yet you guys are doing this project. Why do you think there's an audience for this? Why there's so much out there? What are you doing differently?
Well, I can tell you there's been very expensively done surveys, which of course may not mean that they're true, but by allegedly reputable research organizations, which showed that the national experience is just the opposite of what's been happening in your strange little San Francisco microcosm, which is that people indeed have migrated to multiple platforms for information. And it's not just the Daily Show. It's people really seeking out information in the blogosphere as well as on international news sites, as well as national and local news.
So if all of that's out there, what's the need for this thing, the American News Project? And you said it's the brainchild of this fellow both of us know, Nick Penniman, who was, in fact, the publisher of Washington Monthly and has other credentials on his CV that are consequential. But why one more? What's being done here that is special and is unique?
Well, the reason I want to encourage people when they're not listening to Peter B's show to go online and check it out, it's because it is, first of all, a very lush visual experience. The people who have been hired to do the work, and it's a core group of about 10, are all remarkable documentary filmmakers, primarily, who have now been retooled and re-guided to do journalism as well. So you have a story which might be covered elsewhere in interesting terms, very dynamically, but if you see the same story on the American News Project, newsproject.org, you are taken almost immediately by the intensity of the visual approach to the story.
So that's what is unique here? It's the pictures?
It's not just that. It's the depth of the story. The average piece is running about 6.5 minutes, which is something like 4 times the length of the average network news piece.
Yeah, but what makes you think, if you're talking about scientific studies, certainly the networks have done studies to determine that 2 minutes is about the attention span of the average American, maybe. Why is somebody going to sit around for 6 minutes?
The difference between taking in a television news story passively is that they play it and you get it or you don't. If you go to something like newsproject.org, you click on the story in which you might have an interest, and if you get distracted, why, you can click pause, can't you?
Yeah, you can, but you know, the argument against that, I think, that can be made is that this kind of self-selection obviates the opportunity for there to be a collective curriculum of information that everyone shares. So if I go to your site and see a story that's interesting to me, and before the hour is over, we're going to do this. We're going to share a story that you did for the American News Project with the audience here and get a sense of what that tone is, although you'll have to describe the visuals because this is radio. But if I am picking a story that you did there, then that doesn't mean that my engineer here, Brian Urban, has seen it, and we are going to be able to have a conversation about that over coffee, whereas a couple of generations ago, he and I both probably would have been sitting in front of Walter Cronkite, and the next morning we'd have the same information.
Right. The water cooler conversation has gotten really fragmented along with the great television news viewing audience.
So is that good or is that bad?
But it depends on what your understanding is of the role of broadcast news. I remember, and I'm sure you do too, since you and I both toiled at different times over a 20-year period at NBC News, NBC News had at its boilerplate to tie the nation together in time of crisis and national need and requirement. Nobody talks like that anymore.
And whether that kind of a patriotic statement is appropriate or not, or just the cultural tie, it seems to me that when we all decide for ourselves what we want to know, we're not only not going to have that national curriculum of information, but we're also doing ourselves on an individual basis a disservice, because if what you're interested in is ballet dancers because one of your daughters is studying ballet, and so you are constantly looking at information about ballet, you're not going to know about the cha-cha-cha.
Right. However, you're asking me to not make decisions for myself, whereas in the past, what happened was, because you didn't have choices, you wound up essentially being pulled into a national discussion. Now, I happen to think that was a really healthy thing for the development of the nation state in the technological age. Look, let's just for a second, this may sound like a slightly weird digression, but hopefully not. There was this guy named Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, and he was this brilliant, tough-as-nails leader in Turkey, and he decided that the reason Turkey was all broken up into chunks and pieces and wasn't a real country was that people didn't know how to read or write, and they spoke bits and pieces of various dialect. Well, when he came to power, he sent the army throughout the country in groups of two soldiers. After each one of these soldiers was schooled in the fundamentals of the Turkish language and reading and writing, and their job was to go in every village and hamlet, and in the space of something like 10 years, Turkey became a literate nation, a nation with a singular purpose and a singular recognized shared identity. And, you know, that's the day before technology. But in many ways, what happened with network radio broadcasting and then television broadcasting was that we became a nation of common idea and common debate.
You are listening to the Peter B. Collins program. I'm Peter Loeffler, holding the fort for Peter B. Collins and entertaining the philosophies of my colleague, Jeff Kamen in Washington, the journalist who is working with the American News Project. So we don't need that any longer because we are a nation state, and so now we can go our merry way independently and not know what the guy on the other side of the fence in the backyard is thinking?
You're not going to get me to defend the fragmentation of the media, but there's no going back.
There's no going back.
Nope. Can't go back. Every now and then, we all join in to watch the same horrifying imagery.
When CNN is taking pictures of a disaster somewhere?
Well, when any of the networks is doing it, and suddenly they've all got the same shot up because in those moments, we are, in fact, all one nation.
But other than that, we're fragmented, and with all of the problems that that causes, you don't see a way of... Because in a way, Jeff Kamen, isn't this the media variation of the overall theme of the Obama campaign, that bringing us back together, even the Schwarzenegger philosophy, whether it in fact plays out or not, but post-partisan, shouldn't there be in the culture some common denominators?
As I said, you're not going to get me to defend fragmentation because I don't think it's healthy for the nation, but it's here. It's just like I don't think that giving kids at the age of 18 free access to alcohol and tobacco is healthy, but that's what you do, and you pay a price in tens of thousands of unnecessary deaths and hundreds of thousands of unnecessary automobile accidents, but that's the way it is. I think that it's a serious problem, but it's one we're not going to retreat from. I don't think so. I think what has to happen is there has to be shared values and shared beliefs and shared dedication to fixing that which is wrong in America, which is what is so attractive and so seductive about Barack Obama's message, which is why he has an opportunity to become the next president of the United States. It wouldn't have mattered how handsome he was or how golden-toned his skin. Those benefits, as they are among many people in society, as opposed to deficits in other parts of society, wouldn't matter a whit if he hadn't had an idea driven by a powerful intellect.
Yeah, don't you think it's funny that he's referred to as the first black candidate and he's half white, you know? It is the Peter B. Collins program. I'm Peter Loeffler. Jeff Kamen is laughing on the line here from Washington, D.C., and we're going to get a glimpse of one of his pieces for the American News Project here momentarily. The American News Project, which just launched a new what? What would you call it?
It is web-based, investigative, and intense television news.
And lily-livered liberals, right?
Lily-livered liberals?
Well, it's got this pink tinge. It's a bunch of red diaper babies.
Oh, I don't know. I think that that's probably reasonably incorrect. I think that a number of the people who are associated with this organization have been involved in advocacy filmmaking in the past, but it doesn't matter. Judge this organization's work by its work, not by any background of anyone. It's sort of like what's happened across the country in various newspapers where the owner's ideology has oozed off the editorial page into the news pages and just, you know, making ill the dedicated journalists who just want to tell the news as straight as they possibly can.
Jeff Kamen with the American News Project. Check it out at newsproject.org. I'm Peter Loeffler, in for Peter B. Collins. Our conversation with Jeff Kamen continues momentarily.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and we had reports of an accident. Salinas, northbound 101 before Main Street. Solo spin up off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP on the way to check up on that. CHP also on the scene with a crash up in Ben Lomond. Highway 9 at Alba Road. Two cars off to the side there. Thanks to Steve for giving us a call and letting us know about a crash in Monterey. 68 at York Road. From what he told us, it sounds like lanes are blocked in both directions with heavy traffic approaching the scene. If that's still out there or you can update us on the situation, let us know. 415-901-7990. This is brought to you by your neighborhood Ace Hardware. Shop the Ace Big Daddy Sale with great deals for every dad. Hurry in. The sale is today through Monday at Ace, the helpful place. That is traffic. I'm Nate Nix on KRXA.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
This here is the Peter B. Collins Program, and I am Peter Lauper. Please be sitting in for my friend and colleague Peter B. while he makes his way up to Minneapolis and joins us next hour to let us know what he's doing up there. In the meantime, if you'd like to check in with me, you're always welcome to drop me a note at Peter Lauffer, that's L-A-U-F-E-R, Peter Lauffer, at peterlauffer.com. And on the line with me is another friend and colleague, Jeff Kamen in Washington, D.C., who's now with the American News Project, which you can see at newsproject.org, a new, what you're calling, again, give me that elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch. It's television news on the web, extremely high quality, investigative, intense, visually brilliant. I have a piece on there, but my piece, which is pretty strong, I think is dwarfed by the other pieces that are presented there.
Well, nonetheless, you're the one we've got on the line, and so we're going to use your piece as an example, and it's called If Not Hillary, and you made this a couple of days ago as the Democrats were meeting the Rules Committee to determine what was going to happen with Michigan and Florida, and there was a Stalinist-like bussing in of Hillary supporters to... Am I right?
I think Stalinist might somehow be a bit of a spin on this thing.
Oh, okay. Then a Peronist-like bussing in of Hillary supporters to make a bunch of noise out front to try to grab the attention of you journalists who were there trying to make sense of it all, right?
Yes,
pick it up from there.
Some of the unions from Florida, the Democratic Party in Florida, and Michigan had real trouble either renting buses or they rented too many buses, and they promised journalists that thousands would show up and hundreds did. But that's okay. That's okay. The Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign was already beginning to wind down despite itself and despite the deeply felt passions of Hillary's core supporters.
And so why was this a story? Why was this something for the American News Project?
Because part of the mission statement is to give voice to those who have legitimate, passionate concerns about what's happening in American political life. And the people out there who were moved by the police very gently onto a section of Rock Creek Park, the scene reminded me of a very old song, Saturday in the Park, every day is the 4th of July. The only thing missing were the fresh cold drinks and the balloons. Instead of thousands, there were hundreds, average age, probably 43, 44, overwhelmingly white. Folks in shirts and T-shirts, and the T-shirts had political messages, mostly count every vote and variants on that.
So now we're going to hear a piece of this, but being as it's radio, which as you well know is television without pictures, you'll provide us, before we play this clip, with what we would be seeing as your piece starts, because you talk about the visual richness of the work that you all are doing.
So fade in, exterior, daylight. Tilt down, wide angle, hundreds of people partying, laughing, dancing, and singing.
And here it comes.
They were having a really good time, and it felt almost like a shame to interrupt them with the hard questions of the day, most of which went something like, what are you going to do with your vote now that Hillary is essentially gone?
Yeah, and intriguing in the piece was that you found people who were working hard for Hillary Clinton who said that they would vote for John McCain. As a longtime Washington pundit, to use the cliche, what do you make of that?
Well, what I make of it is profoundly, passionately held support for Hillary, not just as a political figure, but as a cultural figure. Let's remember that black men in America got the vote before white women did, before women of any color did. And women and others in minority groups had always coalesced on behalf of civil rights. And there are women who are old enough or who have relatives who have told them about the bad days when their votes either didn't count or they couldn't vote, and that is still a living memory.
But isn't this perverse? Because that means that sexism and racism is not just a living memory, but alive, and alive amongst those who are supposedly the victims. If these people are liberated to vote, then it should matter not one whit the color or the gender of the candidate. What matters is the platform.
Well, you know, you'd like to believe that, and I've discovered, however, that this year the perfect candidate isn't running on any ticket, and the perfect electorate doesn't seem to be around to support the non-perfect candidate. So we're going to have to mix and match with us imperfect voters and the imperfect candidates and try to sort out what's the best collection and what's the best distillation for moving the country forward instead of backward or falling sort of backwards and sideways at the same time.
Yeah, Jeff Kamen, news reporter in Washington, D.C., here on the Peter B. Collins Show with me, Peter Lawfer. We have literally only 2 minutes left in this hour, and I want to take advantage of your position in Washington and the fact that you've done a lot of work both inside and outside the Pentagon, inside as a filmmaker and outside as a news reporter. What do you make of the two top Air Force officials getting kicked out today?
Hasn't happened like this before. It is a very serious piece of business. Defense Secretary Bob Gates came to this job when he was invited to do so by the president, who had been all but politically destroyed by his following along with Don Rumsfeld's ideas of what to do with the American military, because remember, President Bush had no idea on his own. And then he reached out to Gates and said, can you come over here and clean things up a little bit, at least help me out a bit? Only what maybe he didn't count on was that Gates came in to clean the entire place up, and he's in the process of doing that. The Air Force had very poor security around nuclear weapons, and they wound up flying 6 live warheads across the United States, to the center of the United States, by accident. I mean, nobody got hurt, but it could have been a calamity, and the controls were awful and almost non-existent internally. And these bozos, the Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, we're thrown in the street today, essentially.
And from your experiences, and now we just have seconds, working inside and outside the Pentagon, is this going to be something well-received by the so-called boots on the ground?
By most of the professionals in all the services, they're all saying, thank God at last. Now look at the other services and do the same if it's required.
Jeff Kamen, thank you for your time today here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you want to learn more about him and his work, check out newsproject.org. I'm Peter Lawther. We come back to talk about the valedictorian at the Fresno High School with the 4-point-plus average about to be deported to Armenia because of immigration irregularities. All of that here on the Peter B. Collins Show with me, Peter Lawther. Stay tuned.
Talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com to place an order or ask a...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Suspects of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, including the self-described mastermind, appeared today before a military tribunal at Guantanamo Bay. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr was there.
It was a surreal reunion of five men who the government charges were on the board of directors of Al-Qaeda. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was clearly in charge. Mohammed, dressed in a white tunic and turban with a flowing 10-inch beard, openly made hand signals and seemed to be directing his co-defendants, who sat single file behind him. Walid bin Attash, known as Khalad, accused of running terror training camps. Ramzi bin al-Shib, who the government says helped train the 9/11 hijackers. And two money men, Ali Abdulaziz Ali and Mustafa Halsawi, accused of financing the attacks.
All five rejected lawyers. They did not enter pleas. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told the judge he wants to be executed, so he'll become a martyr. They were two major embarrassments for the Air Force. A B-52 bomber flew across the American heartland, mistakenly armed with six nuclear missiles. And then it came out that electrical fuses for ballistic missile warheads were shipped to Taiwan, which was expecting helicopter batteries. Today, Defense Secretary Robert Gates fired the Secretary of the Air Force, Michael Wynn, and its top general, Michael Mosley.
I believe that we needed a change of leadership to bring a new perspective, especially underscore the importance of accountability in dealing with these kinds of problems.
An internal report concluded that the Air Force's standards for handling nuclear materials had been in decline, but the problem was not addressed for more than a decade. Barack Obama says he hasn't had a lengthy conversation with Hillary Clinton since he locked up the Democratic nomination. She'll endorse him on Saturday. And Obama says he welcomes support from the senator and her husband.
Bill Clinton is an enormous talent. And I would welcome him campaigning for me.
The Clinton campaign has put out the word that she is not actively seeking the vice presidential nomination. A senior staffer tells CBS News she will do whatever she's asked to do by Obama. Campaign officials say John McCain had the best fundraising month of his presidential campaign in May. McCain collected $21.5 million. The Republican National Committee also raised nearly $24 million. Airlines are paying huge amounts of money for jet fuel, and CBS News correspondent Nancy Korda says something had to give.
Now you're seeing the airlines, one after the other, cutting flights, cutting staff, raising fares, raising fees, doing anything that they can to make up the difference.
Continental today became the latest to announce cuts. It will reduce capacity by 11% this fall and eliminate 3,000 jobs. The airline's two top executives will forego their salaries for the rest of the year. The price of oil shot up $6 a barrel today, but the Dow shot up too, 213 points. This is CBS News.
Oh, hey, Dad.
Hey.
Hey, where are you going?
I thought I'd go over to Home Depot.
Oh, what do we need?
Maybe we'll figure it out when we get there.
It's time to remember where Dad goes when he doesn't have to go anywhere. The Home Depot. Buy any select Ryobi Power Tool Combo Kit for Father's Day and get your choice of over 30 Ryobi One Plus tools free. The Home Depot, proud sponsor of Father's Day. Offer valid through June 18th in U.S. only. See store for details.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25%, too. From June 5th through the 9th, it's a summer savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 25% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save, only at Sherwin-Williams, for painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Two astronauts from Shuttle Discovery spent more than 7 hours working outside the International Space Station. CBS News correspondent Peter King is covering the mission.
The astronauts spent most of their time outfitting the new Japanese laboratory. They also inspected a rotary joint motor on the station's port side, similar to a starboard side motor that's been stalled since last fall. Astronaut Mike Fossum says unlike the starboard side, he saw no metal shavings, but there was other wear and tear.
A few lines that almost look like that grease or something that's kind of pushed out to the outside edge.
Those motors keep the station's solar wings aimed at the sun. NASA's been troubleshooting, but so far hasn't come up with a definite cause or fix, and it's too early to tell what this latest discovery might mean. Peter King, CBS News at the Kennedy Space Center.
Authorities in Mobile, Alabama say Joshua Mullen accidentally set his rented house on fire when he used gasoline to kill a swarm of bees. A water heater ignited the fumes. The bees were exterminated. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Oh, hey, Dad.
Hey.
Hey, where are you going?
I thought I'd go over to Home Depot.
Oh, what do we need?
Maybe we'll figure it out when we get there.
It's time to remember where Dad goes when he doesn't have to go anywhere. The Home Depot, where you'll find his perfect Father's Day gift, like a Brinkman 4-burner gas grill for just $199, or give him a Home Depot gift card. The Home Depot, proud sponsor of Father's Day. U.S. only. See store for details.
In spring, love is in the air. And so are a lot of other things, like pollen, dust, and that old romance killer, ragweed. So if you want to be able to see the love light in her eyes or his eyes, make sure you get Clear Eyes Itchy Eye Relief. It clears up itchy, red, and watery eyes so that nothing comes between you and amore. Mm. Want Clear Eyes? Get Clear Eyes brand Itchy Eye Relief. Use as directed.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Well, I'll tell you, I have been drinking strong black tea for 2 hours and chewing my way through Peter B. Collins' Altoid stash, and I still cannot talk as fast as that announcer. I'm not going to try any longer. I'm Peter Lawford, pleased to be sitting in for Peter B. Collins, who is in Minneapolis at a conference, and we will be hearing from him this hour to find out exactly what he's doing. It's been a fascinating show so far. I spent the first hour talking with my friend, colleague, and co-author, Marcos Kounoulakis, about our book, Hope is a Tattered Flag, and then checked in with Charles Jaco, the journalist in St. Louis, another friend and colleague, talking about globalization in the context of Anheuser-Busch being bought by the Brazilians, and then hooked up with Jeff Kamen, another journalist, friend, and colleague in Washington, D.C., to talk about the American News Project, the new news-gathering organization he's engaged with. all of that to bring me to what we refer to in the talk radio business as our number three, and to introduce another in a long line I am privileged to enjoy of friends and colleagues in this fine profession of ours, journalism, and that's Terry Phillips. Terry Phillips, the longtime CBS News correspondent and the author of the historical novel just out, Murder at the Altar. Terry Phillips, welcome to the Peter B. Collins program.
Thank you, Peter, and I think your audience is going to start worrying that you don't have friends with normal lives.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I fear that my wife shares that concern, as you well know. No, it's interesting how we do tend to develop friendships out of places where we interact, and often that's the workplace, and so we tend to have friends who are colleagues from work, and those of us who are journalists tend to have demented and perverse friends, consequently.
Well, we certainly have a skewed point of view on the world.
We do indeed. Now, whenever you and I are lucky enough to get together in a public arena, whether it's a speech somewhere or broadcasting, and I have the pleasure and the honor of introducing you, I like to introduce you in a way that I know you're going to recognize, and then you'll provide the punchline, or maybe I will, but we'll see how it plays out. You spent a long portion of your illustrious career working for CBS News, and you really worked from what we can say with compassion, not in a derogatory manner, the hell holes of our world. Some examples of those datelines?
Well, first of all, I think the Russians would object to that term because I spent a lot of time based in Moscow.
Yeah, well,
Moscow.
With all due respect, I spent some time in Moscow, too, and I'll happily label it a hell hole, at least when I was there.
All right. It's of course, it's one of the world's great cities and one of the most challenging places in the world to work.
Yeah, and the time when I was working there and we were there together was right after the fall of the Soviet Union, and it was extraordinarily challenging at
that
time.
Yeah, and all over the Soviet Union, there are places.
And that said, excuse me for interrupting
you,
as is the case almost everywhere. In fact, I cannot think of an exception. Although it was challenging, to put the best face on it, to work there, the warmth and the hospitality of the people was extraordinary.
And particularly at times when we would go to cities and towns that were not in the best of shape, and otherwise we wouldn't be going there. We weren't tourists, after all.
No, we weren't, and we weren't tourists when you and I worked together in another one of the hell holes of the world, Minsk, Belarus.
It was a tough town.
It was a tough town, and we remember, not fondly, but perversely, to use that word again, the time and temperature sign so typical that we see here in this country on a bank or other building that's showing off to the public, time, temperature, and there in Minsk it was time, temperature, and background radiation because of Chernobyl.
That's right.
It was awful.
And then I know you want me to mention places such as Somalia.
Yep. Haiti.
Haiti, Bosnia.
Right.
Iraq, Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, right, and Iraq, back before it was fashionable to go to Afghanistan and Iraq as a journalist.
Right. I arrived in Baghdad 1 month to the day after the Iraqi army crossed the border into the 19th province, otherwise known as Kuwait.
That's right. That first Gulf War, and you were in Afghanistan back in the early days, way before George Bush's escapade there.
I was there when the Mujahideen, in fact, I was there before the Mujahideen came into Kabul to take over that city and lead the world to the catastrophe we now witness there.
So we're establishing your credentials, your background as a journalist, and so of all those hellholes, there's one that you left out that I always remember fondly from your tours of duty, and it's here in the United States.
I'm just not going to call Detroit a hellhole.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Peter.
Yes, you also reported for a long time from Detroit.
Living in Michigan.
You still have friends living in Michigan. And, of course, as you pointed out to me, Detroit, the only place where you arrive from Canada by driving.
Well, it's the largest American city north of the Canadian border.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
This is a very good cocktail party reality. If you ask somebody, they'll never come up with it. Well, somebody will who's from Windsor, maybe, but will not come up with that answer. So, Terry Phillips, author of Murder at the Altar, and we might get a chance to mention your book a little bit more this hour, so people who might be interested in what you're up to now in your post-CBS days can learn a little bit more about. But suffice to say at this point that it deals with some of the problems of Armenia and historically and on into today, and Armenia is of interest to you not just as a news story but because of your familial heritage. And you're talking with us now from your headquarters in Bakersfield. The Central Valley of California is an area that is filled with the Armenian diaspora, particularly your hometown of Fresno. And something is going on there that just seems extraordinarily counterintuitive. Can you give us the headlines?
Sure. Let me just give you a little bit of background first. As we were discussing, you and I were both in the Soviet Union in the post-Soviet era. I was actually there watching the red flag come down over the Kremlin. And among the 15 republics that broke away from the USSR was the Republic of Armenia, which is today an independent republic. But while this was happening, a family living in Armenia got caught up in the independence movement, in part because the father was a police officer, and he was treated as a symbol of the Soviet government.
Because he was a police officer during the time of Armenia being a republic of the USSR, and hence he was an employee of the Kremlin.
That's right. So for the revolutionaries, he was a bad guy. And he was treated as such. Their family grocery store, they also were the grocery business, was vandalized. Their home was burned, and they fled for their lives, following a path that a lot of Armenian exiles took, first to Russia and then eventually to the United States, where they came for safety and to make a new life for themselves.
And they came for safety and to make a new life for themselves, but in terms of their documents, they came on tourist visas.
That's correct. And again, it's a typical thing for people to do. Those who seek asylum often don't have the time or the luxury, the safety, to fill out the paperwork at an American consulate somewhere. So they came here with tourist visas, and then they began the process, and in their case, a very long process, of applying for asylum and eventual permanent residence here.
And that long, to put temporal units to that long period, they started this process in 1992, as I understand.
That's correct. And 15, 16, 17 years later, nearly 17 years later, they find themselves with the father in a detention facility, as the INS prisons are called, in Arizona.
Yeah, and INS dates you a little bit, Immigration and Naturalization Service, now known as Immigration and Customs Enforcement, with the 1984-like acronym ICE.
Right, and all this under the Department of Homeland Security, which was created while they were here in the middle of this application process.
So now the father, again, this is somewhat complicated, but the story is important, and it's important to set up this predicate. The father, we'll find out in a second why he's in detention, but the family consists of the two children, just the two children?
One son was born in Armenia.
And
he
came
was
here
2 years
at the age of
old
two,
when they
yeah,
came
two or
over.
Three, okay.
The other was born here.
Right, and so the one that's born here is a U.S. citizen. The other three, the one who was 2 or 3 years old when he came here, the father and the mother are overstaying their tourist visas, so hence they are, by definition, here illegally. How did the father get picked up?
I don't know.
Okay.
Do you know?
I'm not sure, but I think that it was, and this is ridiculous to speculate, but since I started down this path, I might as well finish.
Sure.
I think that it was part of the process of trying to regularize their status that made it so that the ICE folks, or the folks is too nice a word, the ICE, I mean, not to be derogatory, but we need to identify them for what they are. The ICE agents knew that he was there and picked him up and put him
right.
In his
I mean, let's
facility.
Make it absolutely clear. They were not hiding. They were trying to go through the process of getting legal residence. They were applying for asylum, which is a difficult thing to do, but with apparent, at least arguable, a good reason.
And now we're going to find out why this is in the news momentarily here on the Peter B. Collins Show with my friend and colleague Terry Phillips, reporting from the Central Valley of California on this development. And me, Peter Laufer, pleased to be sitting in for Peter B. Collins, who will join us shortly to report in on why he's in Minneapolis. We're glad you're listening, and you're always welcome to write to me, Peter Laufer, L-A-U-F-E-R, at peterlaufer@peterlaufer.com. This is the Peter B. Collins Program.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We're getting word of a new crash in Prunedale, South 101 at Echo Valley Road. Looks like four cars piled up. All the activity off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP is on the scene. Northbound 101 before Main Street, Salinas. We have a solo spin-out still clearing off to the side. Looks like they're waiting for a tow truck to arrive. And Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at 17. Broken down big rig on the shoulder, but partially blocking that right-hand lane. So definitely look for heavy traffic. Southbound Highway 1 slows from the Fishhook down to about 41st Avenue in Capitola. 68, currently checking in, stalling accident-free. We had reports of an earlier crash at York. It looks like that may have been cleared out of the way. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to flood-damaged cars when they're pulled from the water? Many are dried up, cleaned up, and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you're out and about and you spot a traffic problem, definitely give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
You are listening to The Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm Peter Lawford, pleased to be sitting in Peter B.'s seat today and spending the afternoon with you. We've had a rollicking time, and I've been promising you all afternoon that we would check in with Peter B. We have Terry Phillips on the line. Peter B. Collins is on the line. Terry Phillips is on the line from Bakersfield. Peter B. Collins is on the line from Minneapolis. And the contest now is, where would you rather not be? Peter B. Collins, welcome to your program. Terry Phillips is on the line, not just because he's the author of Murder at the Altar and because he's our friend and colleague, but he's reporting on a fascinating story that you might not know about, Peter B., because you've been in transit, but the valedictorian of one of Fresno's high schools with an over 4-point average and acceptance to the University of California is in danger of being deported. He's been in this country since he was 2 years old, and he has overstayed a tourist visa. And another example of our failed immigration policy. Terry's in the middle of telling us the story, but I'm sure you don't mind, Terry, if we just check in for a couple of minutes with Peter B. And before we do, Peter B., the question to you is, from what country do you imagine that fellow is?
I would guess Sweden.
And
my
why?
Theory has been that the people who overstay tourist visas and stay in our country without documents, or illegally, as Tom Tancredo would say, usually come from Europe.
Well, Terry Phillips, would you consider the country of origin for this guy to be Europe?
Well, at one time, its territory extended all the way to the Mediterranean, but it is today in the Caucasus Mountains.
Okay, there's a clue for you, Peter B. Now, would you like to proceed? You get a second guess.
I guess Russia.
Well, that's going to be wrong. Terry Phillips, could you help Peter B. along? Again, the name of your book is Murder at the Altar.
Oh, I'm going to guess Armenia.
Very good.
Hey, very good. And it is a fascinating case, and it does appear, as Terry will be telling your listeners as soon as we say goodbye to you, Peter, that this guy has a pretty good running chance at staying here. But the inequities are fascinating as we talk about what would it be were he from somewhere else where there wouldn't be the kind of support as someone from Armenia has in Fresno, one of the hearts of the Armenian diaspora worldwide.
Well, we discussed this the other day with a representative of Human Rights Watch, and we were talking about the way ICE treats, various immigrants who can't prove their citizenship. And so it is a serious issue, but it is fair to say that people who are brown and Latino do not have the resources and often the political pull to survive an episode like this.
Yeah, and these guys may not either, but we'll find out before the hour is over. Meanwhile, while we have you, I have been suggesting all afternoon that you would check in and tell your audience why you've chosen to be in Minneapolis instead of San Francisco today.
I will be broadcasting live from the National Conference on Media Reform tomorrow, and we'll have a special one-hour broadcast
for 960
on Saturday.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. I'm interrupting you because that suggests that there's some need for media reform.
Yes, because I really feel that we don't get enough information about Hannah Montana and Britney Spears.
Well, then you obviously haven't been listening to the last couple of hours of your program, where I've been spending an inordinate amount of time on just those two, because I realize your audience does not receive that kind of information from you.
That's right. They're starved for it. No, it's going to be an interesting weekend. Bill Moyer is here, John Nichols and Bob McChesney, who founded Free Press and have launched the media reform movement. We want to try to preserve net neutrality. We want to try to roll back, some of the one-sidedness, particularly in talk radio. And we want to take a look at a lot of the other issues because we've seen gross failures by the media. You and I have known about them for many years, but Scott McClellan has brought them into recent sharp relief, as has the New York Times report on the way the Pentagon inserted generals into the corporate media back in 2003.
So all of that coming up this weekend in Minneapolis, and you will be broadcasting again because I interrupted you from there tomorrow, and your listeners can hear you where?
On all of our regular stations on Friday, and then on Saturday we'll be doing a special live feed for Green 960 in San Francisco, and that'll be between 1 and 2 o'clock on Saturday. Ariana Huffington will be joining me, and I'm going to talk to Naomi Klein, somebody I've been chasing for an interview since her Shock Doctrine book was published earlier last year.
Well, that all sounds terrific, and are you going to manage to have any fun there in the great unwashed Midwest?
We're going to do what we can. We were delayed getting in by thunderstorms, and then they wouldn't let the baggage handlers unload the plane because of lightning at the airport. So it's about a two-hour delay, and therefore I'm famished, and we're going to go find some life here in downtown Minneapolis as soon as I get off the air here.
I understand they have beer in the Midwest, Peter.
Say that again, Terry?
I understand they have some beer in the Midwest.
You might look into that.
They do have massive quantities of beer in local breweries, and I think it should be pretty good here.
Yeah, you'll have a great time. Minneapolis, we were talking earlier with C.D. Jekyll, who's headquartered now in St. Louis, Missouri, and talking about the strength of some of these heartland communities. Minneapolis was one of the ones we identified with Kansas City and with Chicago, places that we out here on the West Coast have a certain arrogance to when we talk about them as flyover cities.
Well, I'm looking at downtown Minneapolis right now. I can't count the skyscrapers, like 14 or more. And it's not a town that is, you know, it's 7:30 here, and there's still people on the streets. It's not one of those commuter towns where everybody goes to the suburbs at night. So it does seem to be a thriving place. I've been here once before, but I stayed on the St. Paul side.
Well, enjoy your time in Minneapolis, and stay tuned for Peter B. on his own show tomorrow. And if you really can't find anything to do while you wait for your baggage, dial up the show and listen to the remainder of the show as Terry Phillips tells us the story of this Armenian valedictorian.
Excellent. Well, Peter, thanks for sitting in. And, Terry, it's great to hear you again.
Likewise, Peter B.
And there he is, right. Peter B. Collins on his own show. I'm Peter Laufer with Terry Phillips. Terry, stand by, please, and we will continue to tell the story. Terry Phillips, journalist, author of Murder at the Altar. If you are curious about the Armenian diaspora, a fine, fine book written as a novel but full of history. Murder at the Altar. You can Google it and find it. We'll give you his website before the hour is over. I'm Peter Laufer.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Experience the magic of Scotland and Ireland without ever leaving Monterey County. The 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival will be held on Saturday and Sunday, July 5th and 6th, at the beautiful Toro Park on Highway 68 in Salinas. The Scottish Festival offers fun activities for the whole family, including great athletic events like the famous caber toss. You'll enjoy Scottish and Irish entertainers, great crafts, tasty British food and sheepdog demonstrations. Enjoy the colourful mass pipe bands and Highland dancers, and don't miss the Saturday evening barbecue. Special Sunday entertainment with pipers and dancers. Put on your kilts, grab your bagpipes, or just come on down to the 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival. Information and advance tickets are available at montereyscottgames.com or call 831-333-9423.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Well, I wouldn't want to meet that guy in a dark alley and have a speed talking contest with him. Peter Lauffer here, sitting in for Peter B. Collins, and happy to have Terry Phillips, my friend and colleague, on the line, the author of Murder at the Altar. Terry, what is that website for Murder at the Altar?
It's very simple. It's murderatthealtar.com.
Well, it doesn't get any simpler than that. Murderatthealtar.com for a look at the history of Armenia told through a gripping story of the assassination of the Armenian archbishop in a New York church, Murder at the Altar. And we're talking about Armenia in the context today of this, and the background is there if you're just joining the show, a family seeking asylum here in this country, overstaying tourist visas. Finally, the process caught up with them. The father is in detention. The son, who was born in Armenia, about to graduate from high school in Fresno with a 4-point-plus GPA. He's valedictorian of his class. He's accepted at the University of California, and he's facing deportation. But you think he probably won't be thrown out of this country. Why is that, Terry?
Well, first of all, there's one other fact that we should include, which is that he has a younger brother who was born in this country.
And not an uncommon situation for those who are here without the benefit of proper U.S. documentation. The family gets here, and then there are more children, and they're born in this country. And it creates a bifurcated reality with part of the family here, so-called illegally, and part of the family as American as Tom Tancredo.
And given that neither of the children speak Armenian, going back to Armenia would be, among other things, a tremendous burden for them simply to get by in their new country.
And indeed, just to keep everything from being too heavy here, say something in Armenian so those of us who don't know the language can get a sense of what it sounds like. That's no way to talk to your friend.
I just said I'm very happy to speak to you.
Oh, okay. And so what is the status currently?
Well, the status currently is that they have run out of appeals. They've appealed through the process at the immigration level. They appealed to the Federal District Court of Appeals, and they've now asked members of Congress, both a Democrat and a Republican, Senator Dianne Feinstein and Congressman Radonovich, who represents the Central Valley.
He being a Republican.
Right. To present what is called a private bill in Congress, which would explicitly, specifically give them permission to stay.
And only them. But as I understand it, private bills don't have a particularly terrific track record.
They have a very, very, very little chance of succeeding. But this is such a not only high-profile case, thanks to the attention the local media has given it and the local Armenian community has come to rally to their aid, but it's also, frankly, the perfect example of the sort of immigrants we want to have in this country. People who follow the rules.
Well, wait a minute. Let me be Tom Tancredo here. These are not people who followed the rules. These are people who overstayed a tourist visa, who, in fact, conspired, one could say, to come to this country under false pretenses because they never intended to be tourists.
I'm sorry, nothing of the kind. They followed the rules. They applied for a proper visa. They came here. Then they applied, as the rules provide, for a change in status. And they applied and got extensions. And they have not. They are not here on expired visas. They've been given extensions. And they're out of extension.
And I see. Okay. Well,
so they're not,
slap
they're not hiding
here.
From the law. They're,
right.
They're following the law.
And so they made the application for asylum to change their status, and they've gone through the system, and the system has denied them. Do you know why they aren't considered eligible for this status? I imagine it is because it has been ascertained by whatever bureaucrats in charge that they would not be in jeopardy when they go back to the land of the free and the home of the brave in Armenia.
Well, that's the official conclusion. The official conclusion from the immigration officials is they weren't in jeopardy before. Why would they be in jeopardy now? Which, of course, flies in the face of the fact.
Now, but... you, not just as author of the book Murder at the Altar, and not just as someone of Armenian ancestry, but you as a news reporter can perhaps speak to this to some extent because you've been to Armenia, you've been to post-Soviet Armenia, and you stay current regarding Armenian affairs. Do you think this family would be in jeopardy?
There's no doubt in my mind.
Why is that?
Not the least doubt in my mind.
Why is that?
The father refused. The reason he got caught up in all of this, the specific incident that occurred in Armenia, was that the father refused to take a bribe to give somebody to do somebody a favor, which would have violated the law. He was a police officer. He was actually a DMV type of police officer. He was asked to look the other way when a vehicle was trying to when someone was trying to register a vehicle, and so he didn't take the bribe. In fact, he wanted to report this crime. And his boss told him to keep his nose out of it. So he was now treated as somebody who was trying to follow the rules, which in that country, a country that is run by organized crime, by former KGB officials, by former military officials, it's not a country that lends itself to folks who want to follow the law.
So consequently, you, as an expert on Armenian affairs, believe that they would be in jeopardy, and we agree from statistics that a private bill is unlikely to pass. So where is your optimism that the family will be able to stay?
I think the only way that this is going to change is by bringing political pressure to bear on the Immigration Department to reexamine this in light of the facts. And while Congress might not pass a private bill, in fact, the bill in the end might not actually get introduced, all the attention that this is bringing and the cards and letters that are being written and the speeches that are being made will all lead, I think, the people who are responsible for making this decision to reexamine it and to make the correct decision.
The correct decision for them to stay. Now, whenever there's a case like this, Terry, and you've followed them as a news reporter, the specificity of the individual case can tug at our cliched heartstrings, but usually that means there are many more that we're not hearing about, and it seems grotesquely unfair that somebody who's lucky enough to be able to capture the headlines gets taken care of while those who perhaps aren't so deft or don't have the connections aren't. And specifically what I'm thinking about is what we alluded to earlier and what Peter B. Collins talked about here on his program when he joined us from Minneapolis, and that is that because of the strength of the Armenian community, well established for generations in Fresno, they may be able to exert pressure that somebody who is coming up from south of the border and in similar situation wouldn't be able to. Is that a fair question to pose?
It certainly is. This is such a subjective process. From what I know, from what I've been told by people who work inside the system, there's a huge amount of randomness in the way people are chosen. It's almost as if someone flips a coin and says, is this guy in or out? And they can make the case based on the evidence that they have. But the conclusions are often not based primarily on the evidence. The thing that is almost criminal, and I use that word quite deliberately, is that a lot of criminals are given permission to stay here. And the Armenian community is an interesting choice because among all of these emigres from Soviet Armenia came a lot of organized criminals, the same sort of people who are running their government today.
and they're given permission to stay, whereas this family that wants to follow the rules, work hard, earn a living, send their kids to school, and make a better life for themselves and their community, they're being told, sorry, get back on the bus and head back home.
And this is not a privileged family itself. The Armenian community certainly does quite well in Fresno and Central Valley. But what was the father's occupation before we decided to throw him in prison and spend tax dollars to feed him?
You mean in this country?
Yes.
He worked as a truck driver. His wife, I think, worked in a jewelry store. They were common blue-collar workers.
And why don't we lock her up?
Well, I think they took pity on the family that, at least during this interim period, that they wanted at least someone to be able to take care of the kids because they had two minor children.
And, in fact, there was some at least seeming compassion showed by not deporting them consciously until he marched with his class as valedictorian.
Right, and I'm not sure whether that in the end turns out to be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, how much more poignant is it? You know, you give him, you walk him right up to the edge, and then you take it all away from him.
Yeah, you say, here's the American dream, and you did everything right, and you're going home, except
yeah.
It seems part of the American dream is being able to manipulate and harness public opinion, and he or those who encountered the story, and hats off to the Fresno Bee, which broke the story, as I understand it, right?
It did, and featured it 2 days in a row on their front page.
And this kind of attention, of course, we know can move policy, and you're pretty convinced that is going to happen in this case.
I'm very convinced that this is going to have a much better chance than the overwhelming majority of people who are in the same situation who have no chance, zero chance.
Yeah. And so walk us through what it would be like were they to be deported. They'd arrive, their plane would land probably via Moscow at Yerevan.
Yeah, though there are other routes now, but that would certainly be one way for them to get there.
And what would that look like? You've been there, the plane lands.
Yeah.
What do you
Well,
see?
They most likely arrive in the middle of the night. That's when planes tend to arrive in Yerevan. They would, unless they were lucky enough to be able to get in touch with friends or relatives, if they have any left over there, who would meet them at the airport, they'd then have to pay some extortionist rate to a taxi to get them into town. And where they would stay beyond that point is completely unclear. Again, if they have family there, they certainly wouldn't have their own home. They'd be sharing space in someone else's tiny, cramped apartment. They would be subjected to the impossible bureaucracy that is the post-Soviet world, not that different in some ways, to the Soviet Union. And what would they do for income? What would they do just for basic survival? It's a complete chaotic prospect.
Yeah, and when somebody is deported, the United States government feels no obligation and has no obligation to do anything once they're out of this country. These guys would just be dropped off, and they'd be on their own.
Well, even worse, my understanding is they'd never be allowed to return, ever.
Right, because
which is really strange, since the youngest child, the younger son, in fact, would have the right. He would not be deported, but the family would take him along.
Sure, and he would be able to return, but the others would not be able to come back because one of the rules we make is a lifetime ban when
right.
this kind of a deportation takes
right.
place. And what about the cost? If they were lucky enough to find some kind of equivalent apartment, what would they be paying for it?
Well, there aren't equivalent apartments, but if they found something within the Armenian economy, land is still relatively cheap over there, but so is income. They're very, very low.
Yeah, but maybe they stashed a bunch since 1992, and they're going back with a lot of dollars.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they could, if they do have resources, they could conceivably do okay over there. Then again, who knows what fines they would face for having left the country. They might be prosecuted for having left Armenia, for having taken their son out of the country and not having registered him for the draft. I mean, there are all kinds of potential pitfalls that they might face when they return.
Amazing story. Terry Phillips, former CBS News correspondent, author of Murder at the Altar, a book that deals with some of the sordid history of Armenia, especially the Armenia that developed after the Soviet Union was founded and took part of Armenia as a republic of the Soviet Union. Something that you can learn more about by checking in at murderatthealtar.com. Terry, we're going to talk about the book here momentarily to learn more about why that might be of interest to some in Peter B. Collins' audience as the program continues. If you can stick around.
I'll stick around, and I might have something to say about Jeff Kamen's Ataturk story, too.
Okay. That would be intriguing. Peter B. Collins is not here today. I'm Peter Lauffer, pleased to be sitting here at his studios in San Francisco talking with the news correspondent Terry Phillips and the author of Murder at the Altar, a book you can check out at murderatthealtar.com. The conversation will continue here momentarily.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We're getting word of a new crash in Prunedale, South 101 at Echo Valley Road. Looks like four cars piled up, all the activity off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP is on the scene. Northbound 101 before Main Street, Salinas. We have a solo spin-out still clearing off to the side. Looks like they're waiting for a tow truck to arrive. And Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at 17. Broken down big rig on the shoulder, but partially blocking that right-hand lane. So definitely look for heavy traffic. Southbound Highway 1 slows from the Fishhook down to about 41st Avenue in Capitola. 68. Currently check and install an accident-free. We had reports of an earlier crash at York. It looks like that may have been cleared out of the way. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to flood-damaged cars when they're pulled from the water? Many are dried up, cleaned up, and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you're out and about and you spot a traffic problem, definitely give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and we'll return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast. And I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540. What you know when
I've come to... Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
You are listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Peter Lauffer, sitting in for Peter B. Collins, and I'm talking with my friend and colleague, the news reporter, journalist, author, Terry Phillips, author of the book Murder at the Altar, a book that deals with a great adventure story, a great murder mystery, and a whole lot of Armenian history painlessly put in, murderatthealtar.com, where you can learn more about that book. And Terry, you were talking about the story that Jeff Kamen, a colleague of ours, told earlier in the program when he was talking about the work that he's doing on the American News Project, something you can learn about at newsproject.org. And he was talking about Ataturk bringing literacy to the outback of Turkey via the army. And, of course, there's a long history of conflict between Armenians and Turks, and you have another version of that story.
Well, a slightly additional interpretation, if I may. First, let's
let's point out that you and I are in the business of expressing ourselves and other people's stories and benefiting from the freedom to do so that that this country's laws guarantee. Not all countries in the world provide that same guarantee. Turkey is an example of that.
Yeah, and just parenthetically, we guarantee it in our laws, but those who administer our laws often, as has been the case the last 8 years, try to figure out ways to prevent that from occurring, and we have to continually be vigilant in this country, even as we're so proud of the fact that our system is one of the freest in the world.
Absolutely. But you and I just now are spending a fair amount of time criticizing our government, something that would not come quite so easily in many places in the world. And specifically with respect to Turkey...
Wait a minute, there are some black helicopters hovering over the studio.
There's a law that makes it, I guess, the equivalent of a felony to defame Turkishness or the Turkish government or Turkish officials.
That's right. And in fact, the Nobel Prize-winning author, whose name in Turkish means cotton in English, and I learned that very well, and the problem with having learned that is I always forget his name, and you're going to remind me the
no,
author.
I'm not.
You're not. Well, then I'll get it while you talk.
Okay.
And in fact, he was prosecuted, won
yes,
his
he was.
Case.
Yes, he was. And the although eventually the case was dropped, but the fact remains that if one in Turkey were to tell the truth about that part of Turkish history during which about 1.5 million Armenians were massacred,
Orhan Pamuk,
exactly,
yes,
it would be a serious crime.
Yes, and in fact, the problem that he ran into was acknowledging that something happened to the Armenians.
That's right, and so. In the wake of the collapse of the Turkish Ottoman Empire, and with the rise of the new Turkish Republic founded by Mr. Atatürk, there was a creation of laws and westernization of the country. But then there was this dark side. It would be as if the post World War II German government would have said, "Well, we of course had nothing to do with those other Germans."
And in fact, there is a parallel there. The East German government essentially said that and said, "We, the good socialists here on the east side, weren't the bad guys. It was those guys over there in West Germany."
Right, but of course, the world recognizes the community of historians globally recognizes what happened and the direct connection. One nation inherited the good deeds and the bad deeds of its predecessor. And so he mentions Atatürk having brought literacy to Turkey, but the kind of literacy that was brought is, in my humble opinion, not knowledge. It's focused literacy for a very specific political purpose. It would be as if in this country we were to say to children, well, you can go to school and you can learn, you can study whatever you want, but it's on the basis that the United States is the greatest country on earth. And that George Washington
never told a lie.
Never told a lie.
But in fact, Terry, you have to stipulate, I would think, and we're almost out of this self-indulgent time, but I think it's interesting for the audience nonetheless, but you would have to acknowledge that the fact that literacy came to them and then these generations later, or literacy was taught, they learned how to read and write, the best way to put it, let's not make it passive, and it wasn't just delivered. Now, these generations later, because of things like the internet, because of things like satellite-delivered television, because of the freedom to travel, because of the interaction of Turks with Western Europe as guest workers, that kind of parochialism, that kind of restriction of what is available no longer exists. And that is what we are, one would hope, seeing as Turkey endeavors to join the European community, and it's mandated because of the rules of the European community.
And the only thing I would like to add to the only thing I'd like to add to that is drawing back from something you and Marcos Kornilakis discussed in a previous hour, trying to make a distinction between government and administration is all well and good, but sometimes they're the same thing. And in this case, what we have is the same thing. I'm very proud of my Armenian heritage. There are many things about my Armenian-ness, my Armenian roots that I love. But it's also important to point out those things that went wrong, which I do in my book. And it's also important for us to have the freedom and to exercise that freedom to criticize those things which are wrong today, which we don't always do because of fear of being labeled as unpatriotic.
Yeah. Well, despite your prejudices against Turkey, you and I had a fine time in Istanbul.
Yes, we did. It was a great place.
Enjoyed ourselves immensely. Listen, it's time to say goodbye, but before I do that, I just want to draw folks' attention one more time, not just because you're my friend and colleague, but because it's a fine book, to murderatthealtar.com, where they can learn more about you, your Armenian roots, and the book that you wrote, Murder at the Altar. Terry Phillips, thank you for spending this hour with me here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's always a joy, Peter.
Thank you. Terry Phillips, I'm Peter Lawfer, and again, if you'd like to correspond, I look forward to hearing from you. You're welcome to write to me at peterlawfer.com. That's L-A-U-F-E-R, peterlawfer@peterlawfer.com. If you're just getting in at the end of the show, we've had a rollicking time here, kicking around a lot of stuff with friends and colleagues of mine who are journalists all around the country, starting with the aforementioned Marcos Kounoulakis, the publisher of Washington Monthly magazine and my co-anchor at Washington Monthly on the radio, heard on many of the radio stations that the Peter B. Collins Show is heard on, so you may be familiar with it. And Marcos and I just recently wrote a book that comes out of that radio program, Hope is a Tattered Flag, and you are invited to take a look at hopeisatatteredflag.com to learn more about that book. We also checked in with Jeff Kamen, who told the Ataturk Turkey story that Terry Phillips was referring to. His work can be seen at American News Project, which is newsproject.org. And we talked with Charles Jaco, who works for the Fox television station in St. Louis, about the sale of Anheuser-Busch to a Brazilian company. An eclectic afternoon here on the Peter B. Collins program. Peter B. will be back tomorrow, right here, same time, same station. Goodbye.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A bizarre scene at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba today, as alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed made his first appearance before a U.S. military tribunal. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr was there.
Mohammed, educated in the U.S., dominated the courtroom, chanting verses from the Quran and providing his own English translation. KSM said he only answered to the laws of Allah, and he rejected his American lawyers, saying their President George Bush waged war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they are still killing people there.
Mohammed and four co-defendants insist on defending themselves, and Mohammed told the judge he wants to be executed because that would make him a martyr. Anthony Romero of the ACLU says the tribunals are unfair and unnecessary.
Our federal courts and our court-martials are readily equipped to deal with the need for ensuring that secret evidence or classified evidence doesn't get out to the public. Here they've done just the complete extreme. They've made up the rules as they've gone along.
Some embarrassing blunders by the Air Force prompted a major shakeup today.
A clean sweep at the top because of mistakes such as nuclear missiles transported over U.S. territory and a missile part erroneously shipped to Taiwan. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has fired Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn and Air Force Chief of Staff General Michael Mosley.
I believe that we needed a change of leadership to underscore the importance of accountability.
Though Gates added he has the highest respect for those two men, it's the first time the civilian leader and the military chief of a branch of the armed forces have together been fired. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
If you're unhappy with your cable company, Los Angeles City Attorney Rocky Delgadillo can relate. He's suing Time Warner Cable, saying the company promised not to increase rates, then took some channels out of the basic package, forcing subscribers to pay more.
Time Warner Cable was unable to keep that promise, and Time Warner Cable must be held accountable for its promises.
Fines could run into the tens of millions of dollars. Time Warner says it did not mislead customers in any way and insists its customer service problems have been resolved. The Mortgage Bankers Association says foreclosures and late payments are at their highest level since it started keeping track 29 years ago.